This is the IE America Radio Network. Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
This is Mike Malloy, and so here we are. 2 years have passed since a terrorist attack on U.S. soil left more than 3,000 people dead, U.S. citizens and citizens from dozens of other nations. During these 2 years, we and the world have waited for a full and factual investigation by the Bush administration on whose watch this horrific crime occurred. We continue to wait. Not only has the Bush administration failed to conduct an official inquiry into this massacre, it has also attempted, successfully so far, to impede, delay, and ultimately halt any attempt to unravel the awful truths of September 11, 2001. We must ask why this administration has worked so long and so hard to kill any search for the truth. We must ask why phone calls were made by the highest-ranking Bush administration officials, George Bush and Dick Cheney, to Democratic congressional leaders demanding that any investigation be conducted on nothing more than a superficial level. We must ask why the FBI was used by the Bush administration to intimidate Democratic members of Congress. These members had the temerity to suggest publicly that cooperation was not being provided by the country's intelligence-gathering organizations, that, in fact, Congress was even being denied the simplest information needed for its, at best, cursory and incomplete attempt to get to the truth of 911. We must ask why renegade FBI agents, in other words, agents who refused to participate in the code of silence imposed by Attorney General John Ashcroft, why those agents were reassigned, censured, or otherwise disciplined for attempting to expose the criminal incompetence of the U.S. security and intelligence communities under the control of the Bush administration. We must ask why investigations prior to the awful events of September 11th, investigations into potential terrorist acts such as flying jetliners into densely occupied office buildings, were stopped by the Bush administration. We must ask why the rulers of Saudi Arabia, business partners of the Bush family, and the chief exporters of militant Islam were declared by the Bush administration to be off limits in any comprehensive investigation into the financing of global terrorism of the sort that resulted in the destruction of the Twin Trade Towers in New York City on September 11, 2001. We must ask why members of the extended Bin Laden family, also business partners of the Bush family, were allowed to leave the U.S. shortly after the bombing on 9/11, yet without being questioned by the FBI or other U.S. investigators. This was at a time when less important Arab speakers and people from the Middle East were being swept up in a law enforcement net spread across the U.S. and jailed. We must ask why the U.S. Air Defense System, a multi-billion-dollar system put in place specifically to guard against air attacks against us, had been ordered to stand down on September 11, 2001. We must ask why there was no response from the U.S. military when it became clear this nation was under attack. We must ask who issued those orders to stand down and why. We must ask why it was necessary immediately after 9/11 to pass federal legislation that, in effect, ended constitutional protections provided by the First, Fourth, Fifth, Eighth, and Tenth Amendments. We must ask why we were told by the highest law enforcement officer in the U.S., John Ashcroft, that any questions regarding these changes in domestic law by the public at large or members of Congress would be just short of an act of treason. We must ask why the Bush administration ordered an attack, both unlawful and against the demands of the global community, against two countries that provided not one of the bombers who committed mass murder in this country on September 11, 2001. We must ask why the country that did provide 15 of the 19 killers, Saudi Arabia, was spared the so-called shock and awe of U.S. military might. We must ask why Iraq, why Afghanistan. We must ask why the Bush administration, 2 years after that day of death and destruction, continues to participate in the covering up, the hiding, and the destruction of the facts regarding its failure of leadership that led directly to the awful events of September 11th. This failure of leadership, or worse, participation, active or passive, in the events leading to and following the attack on this country constitutes the greatest failure in this country's history. And if we are to consider this country, our country, to have even a minimal moral center, we must ask why the frustration, the pain, and yes, the agony of the families of those killed on September 11th, 2001, the sons and daughters, the wives and husbands, the mothers and fathers, why their pain does not register with nor matter to the Bush administration. I am reasonably certain that on the third anniversary of the awful and immoral and criminal events of September 11th, 2001, these questions still will not have been answered. I'm Mike Malloy.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Oh, 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 ice cold milk and an Oreo cookie. They forever go together with a classic combination. When a dark, delicious cookie meets an icy cold sensation, like the one and only creamy, crunchy chocolate Oreo, keeps your milk from getting lonely. Oh, 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 the one and only.
Only Oreo, in classic or chocolate cream.
Oh, 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 the one and only.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's been written about in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and Pravda. He spent time with the Pope and the Dalai Lama. And now you can talk with Tom Hartmann simply by calling 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom Hartmann.
And welcome to our program. It's a beautiful Monday, the 15th of September, 2003, day 218 in the search for weapons of mass destruction. David Kaye and over 1,000 people are still over there scouring around. And, of course, we all know they will come up with something, right? Day 733 of the search for that man whose name shall not pass the lips of the President of the United States, Osama bin Laden. Once wanted, dead or alive, now supported and protected by the Pakistani Secret Service, to all appearances. Newsweek was able to find him, but apparently George Bush can't. And today we have a number of things we're going to cover in our first hour. How can conservatives use the term liberal elite when they are the princes of the liberal mindset? I've got some really remarkable examples for you about this. In our second hour, we're going to ask how much harm will be done to democracy by the cynical exploitation of imaging and branding over substance and policy. And in our third hour, we're going to be asking the question, will Iraq be Bush's Vietnam? And just to let you know where we're going to go with that third hour, let me just play you a little tiny clip. This is United States Ambassador to the United Nations, Adlai Stevenson, calling Lyndon Johnson, actually LBJ called him, from the White House on the 27th of May, 1964. We were just freshly into this thing, just starting out. Just take a listen.
I shudder at the getting too deeply involved there, and everybody thinks that's the only alternative.
That's LBJ.
Well, I've been shuddering on this thing.
Let me just one more time.
I shudder at getting too deeply involved there, and everybody thinks that's the only alternative.
Well, I've been shuddering on this thing for 3 years, and I'm afraid we're in a position now where you don't have any alternative, and it's a hell of an alternative. And it really gives me the shakes, but I don't know. He was going to give me all the up-to-date planning.
Yeah, well, we're going to get into that in some more detail. And what are the parallels between Vietnam and Iraq, particularly in the way it's being prosecuted and played out? I think it's going to be very interesting. And a couple of other just update things. I just came back from the GRA conference in Washington, D.C. this weekend. Some interesting observations that I would like to share with you. One real aha that I got. We'll talk about that a little later on. Secondly, yesterday was my father's 75th birthday. Happy birthday, Dad. And third, Leonardo DiCaprio has just produced a new movie. Leonardo DiCaprio, and you can find it by going to leonardodicaprio.com. And if you go to leonardodicaprio.com and you click on the, there's a link there that says
picture this,
a message from Leonardo.
Blue planet protected by
a... This is a message from Leonardo DiCaprio, global warming. Here's a little bit of it.
Air and water in perfect balance to maintain life.
Our atmosphere.
In the cold depths of space, this planet is a virtual paradise, the only one known of its kind, and it is our planet, Earth. But something is wrong. The life-sustaining systems on this planet are breaking down.
So anyhow, I won't play the whole movie for you, but what was particularly gratifying to me, I was out in Los Angeles, 6 months ago or so, and spent a few hours with Leonardo. He was at that time conceiving this thing. And when you get to the very, you can watch it online. It's an online flash movie. When you get to the very end, and it's narrated by him, that's his voice. And when you get to the very end, it says, inspired by the book The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight by Tom Hartman, really makes me feel good, frankly. I mean, okay, my ego trip for the morning, it's out of the way. I think that this is really important. Now let's move on to the news of the day. Having gotten our housekeeping, as it were, out of the way, Nike settles free speech suit. This article in the New York Times by Adam Liptak. Nike has agreed to pay $1.5 million. Nike, you will recall, was claiming that if I have the right to say to Louise, that dress looks really nice on you, when I don't think it's anything such the case, but my free speech right, my right of free speech includes the right to lie. And not just to individuals, but to my government, unless I'm under oath, or to anybody else. Nike had claimed that they had the legal right to lie to consumers in their public relations efforts. And they were supported in this claim that went before the Supreme Court by most of the largest corporations in America, by virtually all of the major newspapers in the United States. And Mark Caskey, the guy who brought the case, was this... lone activist, this guy who runs and used Nike's products at one time, and one of the groups that has spearheaded the fight to prevent the Supreme Court from ruling in Nike's case is Jeff Milchen. One of the group is ReclaimDemocracy.org, who sponsors this program. You will hear their ad once an hour, all 3 hours of this program, 5 days a week. And Jeff Milchen is the director of ReclaimDemocracy.org, and Jeff is on the line. Jeff, hello.
Good morning, Tom.
Hey, Jeff, how you doing today?
Doing fine. Great to be here.
Great to have you here. Tell us about what happened. Number one, what happened when this case got before the Supreme Court? When Nike's saying that they had the right to lie, and you guys and Jeff Caskey saying, wait a minute, you can't. What, you know, just real quickly frame the argument and what happened.
Sure. Well, the Supreme Court, after accepting the case last January, essentially said, we made a mistake. We shouldn't have accepted the case unless Nike was found guilty and that decision made its way up to the Supreme Court. As it stood, Nike essentially was making a preemptive appeal, and the court said, oops, we shouldn't have done that. We need to have Nike go to trial first before we could make a judgment on their claim that the First Amendment immunizes them from the charge of false advertising. So the case was destined to go back to trial in San Francisco sometime next year, but after 5 years since the initial filing of this case, you know, the legal team for both the Nike Corporation and Mark Caskey had some interest in not continuing to drag this out. Obviously, it was being a tremendous drain on time and money for all the parties involved, and so they reached a settlement last Friday in which the Nike Corporation will pay $1.5 million to a group called the Fair Labor Association to promote worker standards and better working conditions overseas, and presumably cover all the legal costs for Mark Caskey, although neither party would either confirm or deny that part of a settlement.
Now, in this New York Times story, first of all, they characterized ReclaimDemocracy.org as an anti-globalization group. How come they do that?
Right. Well, that has been a very frequent label, anti-corporate, anti-globalization, even anti-business. And we actually had a conversation with Linda Greenhouse, the New York Times normal Supreme Court reporter, and she acknowledged that that was an unfair label and said she would do better next time. Unfortunately, it seems she must have been on vacation last week when this story came out, so we had a different reporter who put the same knee-jerk negative label on us. Of course, that's not a label that's applied to, you know, entities like the Nike Corporation don't get labels like anti-democracy, but if you're trying to stand up for democracy, they very frequently, you know, put the unthinking negative labels on you.
Yeah. And in the New York Times article today, in Saturday's paper, you said, and I quote, corporations have a legitimate role to play in society by doing business. You are the owner of a corporation, aren't you?
I've been part of starting up several corporations, both for-profit and non-profit.
Yeah, okay. So we have similar histories in that regard. Anyhow, quoting you, and then you said, but they do not have a legitimate role in influencing public policy. Corporations do not have any claim to the protection of our Bill of Rights, end quote. You want to give us a 30-second snapshot of that, and then I've got to move on with the show here.
Sure. You know, basically our philosophy at ReclaimDemocracy.org is that corporations are a fine institution for doing business, that they are set up well to engage in business activities, but that they need to remain exclusively engaged in business activities, that when you allow corporations to start playing a part in influencing educational policy or public lands policy or what happens in our elections and court system, that you are intruding on the rights of human beings, that it's essentially a zero-sum game, where if corporations are enjoying these illegitimate rights, then that is decreasing the right, the power of each individual citizen to play a meaningful role in what happens in their country.
You know, Jeff, I think that many people listening, probably even very well-educated people, don't understand what a zero-sum game is. Can you quickly explain that?
Sure. Well, the whole founding ideal in this country is one person, one vote, the idea of equal opportunity to influence the policy of the government, what happens in this country, based on the quality of one's ideas and the energy that one puts into promoting them effectively. But when you allow the ready translation of economic power into political power, you deny that possibility. When the institutions and the individuals who have money can not only use that to buy goods and services, but to buy policy, to buy public opinion, then they're taking away from the inherent rights of individuals to play a meaningful role. Individuals' power is marginally decreased every time you allow that purchasing of power.
Right, and a zero-sum game is essentially one within a closed system, where if somebody wins something, somebody else has to lose something.
Sure.
As opposed to a fungible system or a collapsible, expandable system. Okay, and just so everybody knows, ReclaimDemocracy.org, you wrote one of the amicus briefs that were presented before the Supreme Court in the Caskey versus Nike case, and have worked very closely with Mark Caskey in this whole thing, right?
Yes, well, the National Voting Rights Institute, based in Boston, actually submitted the brief on our behalf. We worked in partnership with them in producing the only brief out of many submitted in this case that really took on the fundamental premise of Nike's claim of enjoying you know, what your listeners know as corporate personhood, and claiming that they had a constitutional right to basically strike down the California law that prohibited false advertising. And so that California law does stand. The Supreme Court refused to tackle that. And so the conclusion is a good one in our view. Of course, we would have liked to have seen a bigger settlement.
That's a step.
At least the California law is standing as precedent, and hopefully this will inspire folks in many other states to adopt similar laws. California's is among the strongest in the country, and it'll be nice to see some others following in their footsteps in this case.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. ReclaimDemocracy.org, one of the finest websites out there for reclaiming democracy. Jeff Milchen, its founder. I appreciate you taking the time in your busy morning, Jeff, to give us a call here from Colorado.
Thanks for having me, Tom. And actually, we're up in Bozeman, Montana now.
Oh, you're in Montana now. Oh, great, and your new digs. Thanks, Jeff. Talk to you later.
Good luck.
1-800-TALK-YES if you've got comments. 1-800-825-5937. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. If you go to TomHartman.com, you can find a link to our chat room where you can engage in our conversations, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. We'll be right back.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free. 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Have you tried Maxwell House's freshest coffee ever? Today, Maxwell House, and only Maxwell House, comes with the unique Fresh Seal. Fresh Seal locks flavor and aroma in the coffee. To top it off, Maxwell House's easy open can lets you enjoy that fresh taste without a can opener. For freshness you can taste, choose Maxwell House. It's our freshest coffee ever, and a great way to make every day good to the last drop.
Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished!
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of Progressive Talk Radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really?
Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kick it off your morning with Doug Steffens' Good Day from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time, followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 3 p.m. Then get different perspectives from different show hosts on Radio Free Speed Zone from 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7, followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, i.e. America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
I was having this discussion in a taxi heading downtown. Rearranging my position on this friend of mine who had a little bit of a breakdown. I said, hey, you know, breakdowns, common breakdowns go. So what are you going to do about it? That's what I'd like to know. You don't feel you could love me, but you could.
And welcome back, Patriots Coast to Coast. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, also broadcasting on terrestrial radio stations, actual, real, live, normal, AM, I think most of our stations are AM radio stations from coast to coast. We're also broadcasting from the Sirius Satellite Radio System, Stream 145, and also on the Internet from several different Internet radio stations. RadioPower.org, a community station, a membership-sponsored station, 1.7 million members. They're in the middle of a fund drive right now. Live365.com, which is an Internet station that you can subscribe to, but they also allow you to listen to programs for free. If you just say, hey, I'll subscribe later, you can listen to the show for free. And, of course, the network itself's audio stream, IEAmericaRadio.com. Be sure to get the radio part in there, otherwise you get to a spam site of extraordinary proportions. And that's how our signal's getting out, via the ABC Starguide satellite to radio stations all over and these other methods. And interesting, I wanted to share this with you. It's a little bit off topic, and maybe it's not, but I thought it was just a fascinating insight. As many of you know, I gave a speech this weekend at the Global Renaissance Alliance Conference in Washington, D.C. Last night, John Conyers spoke there. This morning, Maxine Waters, I believe, is speaking, and tomorrow night, Dennis Kucinich is speaking there. And I had to come back to do the program here, but I would have loved to have stayed. But fascinating, and then this entire group, the hundreds of people who were there. There was a lot of role modeling and role playing and working, trying to figure out how to most appropriately approach elected officials. And they're going to go down to Washington, D.C. and knock on doors, and everybody's going to talk to their elected officials. There were people there from 36 different states and three countries. And to work for peace-type issues and for also this Department of Peace. And I had always, up until this weekend, I had thought that the Department of Peace was, frankly, an idea that was, one of those kind of, well, that's a nice thing. But I really got it. Marianne gave this great talk, and she said, we don't have a department of sickness. We have a department of health. You know, we don't have a department of stupidity. We have a department of education. So, you know, peace is not the absence of war, just like health is not the absence of disease. Doctors are getting this. Increasingly, they're getting this, that if you want people not to get sick, you don't always give people penicillin and do surgery on them every week. You make them healthy. That health is a positive state. There's a vitality. There's something real. It is its own state, unique and separate from sickness. In fact, sickness is an intrusion into health, which we try to repel. Similarly, peace is the natural state. It's the natural state of all of nature. You say, well, what about the foxes who eat the bunnies? Well, yeah, that's part of the natural state of nature. That's not warfare. That's just how it works. And war is an intrusion into peace. And so they're going to be lobbying for this Department of Peace. And I've been thinking more and more about it and thinking that it's really cool. But Marianne made this one really interesting point. She said that, in her observation, conservatives were more interested with private morality, what you do in your bedroom, what drugs you take, what movies you watch, what kind of pictures you look at, how you behave sexually with other people in private. The conservatives tend to be interested in private morality. But she said liberals are equally interested in morality, but they're more interested in public morality. Is everybody in our society fed? Is everybody in our society clothed? Is everybody in our society well housed? Do we all have access to public health, to health care? Do we all have access to a good education? These are moral issues that are just as powerful and equal to how people are behaving in their private lives. And I thought it was a real interesting dichotomy. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
Walmart now faces 37 lawsuits in 29 states over its practice of forcing workers to spend time on the job off the clock. The latest case was filed Friday in Minnesota by four women who claimed they were made to come in early, work late, and skip breaks, primarily to tidy up the store floor. Their lawyers estimate the company squeezed some 500,000 hours of unpaid labor out of its Minnesota workforce in the last 5 years. The women seek class action status on behalf of more than 60,000 current and former Walmart workers. The discount behemoths already settled a similar class action lawsuit in Colorado for $50 million, and another is pending in Indiana.
The fifth ministerial meeting of the World Trade Organization collapsed yesterday under protest both inside and out of the Globalization Summit. Inside the meetings, talks were scuttled after Kenya's trade minister led a walkout by poor countries over rich nations' farm sector subsidies and export credits.
2 weeks ago, the chairman of the New York Stock Exchange, Dick Grasso, found himself in the middle of a firestorm of criticism when it was revealed he's getting a $140 million lump sum payment for his work overseeing the trading operation. Grasso initially claimed to have no say in his pay, that is, until a foot-high stack of documents was unearthed last week detailing how he lobbied for his own windfall. The reason? Grasso told the New York Stock Exchange's board of directors he needed the sky-high compensation in order to remain competitive and respected among the corporate executives he has to work with every day. Making matters worse comes a new disclosure that Grasso was to get an additional $48 million in compensation over the next 4 years. He has since agreed to forfeit that, but stands firm on the other $140 million.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
8 years of peace and prosperity. Scandal in the White House. An election is what we need. From coast to coast to Washington.
It's interesting. I pointed out Marianne's observation that conservatives tend to be interested in private morality, and liberals tend to be interested in public morality. There is an equal passion for morality among conservatives and liberals. Now, the conservatives, of course, say liberals are immoral and have no concern about morality because it's not their morality. Most liberals really don't care what people do in their bedrooms when they're if it's, you know, between consenting adults and privacy. Most liberals really don't care, what people are smoking in their own home as long as they don't get out and drive on the highways. Then it becomes an issue of public morality, and you'll find liberals are saying, hey, even if you decriminalize pot, you should make it a crime for people to drive when they're stoned. So, anyhow, the conservatives are saying, well, you know, let's control the private morality. And you see, and you know, the whole Ten Commandments thing in Alabama that Bill O'Reilly has hyped into a national news story, it all comes back to this, you know, to private morality. What are you doing privately? The Ten Commandments doesn't say, thou shalt help thy neighbor. I mean, the message of the Ten Commandments and the message of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount are dramatically different. It's really interesting when you think about it. The Old Testament, in many ways, there's a lot of good stuff about public morality in there, but the stuff quoted by the conservative, the religious conservatives, particularly the religious conservative Christians, tends to be the private morality stuff, largely from the Old Testament. Whereas those things quoted by liberal and progressive Christians or religious people on the left tend to be the public morality issues, even those talked about by Jesus. You know, the guy came to Jesus and said, how do I get in the kingdom of heaven? He says, give away everything you own. The rich man, it's harder for him to get through for a camel to get through the eye of a needle. Bloody, bloody, bloody. You know, I don't want to turn this into a rant about religion, but I thought that was fascinating. And when I said that, one of the folks in our chat room, and this is so cool, having a live chat room when I'm on the air, you know, to have interaction from people who are some really, really smart people, and literally all over the planet. We've had people in the chat room from Germany, from England, from Scotland, from New Zealand, from Australia. We had somebody in there the other day from Japan and somebody else from Taiwan. And a lot of people from the United States, a couple of Canadians. And one of the folks sends back a message saying, it's scrolled off the screen now, so I'll just have to tell you my memory of it. Essentially, private morality allows you to control people's behavior. It's a control issue. So the control freaks are going to be more interested in private morality. We will invade your bedroom to find out what you're up to. Whereas those who are interested in public morality, is everybody fed? Is everybody educated? Do we live in peace? Those tend not to be control issues. They tend to be quality of life issues. And I encourage you in this regard to go back and read the preamble to the Constitution of the United States. You will discover it is all about public morality. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Jeff in Dallas is on the line. Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am great. How are you?
Just fine. Thank you. I just wanted to point something out to you. You're absolutely correct. Your caller or writer, whoever it was, is absolutely correct. The Republicans conservatives are far more concerned about what people are doing in their private lives. And my theory is they're scared to death that you might be having fun.
Well,
what they're even more scared of is that they didn't get to have any of it.
Yeah. You know, I'm very careful of that kind of psychobabble. I don't mean psychobabble and putting you down to say it, but it's, you know, that's the kind of category of stuff where we think that we understand somebody else's emotions or motivations. You know, why is somebody doing it? Why are they doing it? Because, and my personal take on this is that it's sort of like, you know, with the Myers-Briggs test where you've got these, you know, the judges and perceivers we've talked about. There are other dimensions, introversion, extroversion. And now this new book I have out, which we're going to have to do a show on, or at least an hour on here in one of these shows, called The Edison Gene, which reports the latest science on the discoveries of the intersection between genetics and the explosion of culture 40,000 years ago and the gene for ADHD that came out at the same time. I mean, in this book, I'm suggesting that if we didn't have ADD, we would not have modern civilization. And I'll just leave it at that because it's pretty startling, but I will go into the detail in some other program. But the point is that many of these spectrums, this introversion-extroversion spectrum, for example, seems to be neurochemically mediated. People who have a lot of serotonin tend to be extroverts. People with low serotonin levels tend to be introverts. People with a lot of dopamine tend to be very, very verbal and very articulate. And people with low, people with high dopamine levels tend to be very quiet very often are more kinesthetic than auditory. People with lower dopamine levels tend to be very verbal. And so we're discovering that a lot of these behavioral things are mediated by chemicals in our brain. And those chemicals are a function not just of environment. To some small extent, they are. If you put a smile on your face, your serotonin levels actually go up measurably within a 1/10,000th of a second. And even if it's a phony smile, even if it's a false smile, which is Henry James's old thing of, you know, if you feel depressed, stand up straight, put a smile on your face, and go for a walk. But also that there is genetics underneath this. And I think that there's a genetic proclivity or predisposition among some people to be very concerned about the private behavior of others, probably because they obsess on their own private behavior. And I don't think it's about jealousy. I remember, you know, when Jimmy Swaggart was going to the prostitutes and it brought him down. You remember that, Jeff?
Uh-huh, I do.
It was a big thing, you know, Jerry Lee Lewis's cousin and all that. I would bet you that for the year or two or three or however long it was, and I met Jimmy Swaggart once, and what a strange guy. And I'll bet you that for the couple of years, and this is before the fall, and I'll bet you for those couple of years before that fall, he lived in a private hell. Because I'll bet, you know, he was engaging in a behavior, and I'll bet he was just constantly beating himself up for it and praying for redemption and, you know, release me from this and all this. And I think that people who are so concerned about other people's personal behavior are the ones who obsess on their own personal behavior. And those who are concerned about the quality of other people's lives tend to be those who are concerned about the quality of their own lives and their family's lives. I think maybe the scale here is one of empathy. The ability to empathize with others. Those who are most self-involved, and not necessarily in a negative way, but those whose empathy is primarily inner-directed would be the conservatives who are concerned about private behavior, and those whose empathy is external, who empathize with other people very easily and feel other people's pains, those people would be the social liberals whose morality is the public morality. Does that make sense to you?
I do, but I think that you hit on a more correct analysis when you were talking about Jimmy Swaggart and the prostitute. And that is, my experience is that people who are hyper concerned about other people's behavior are, in fact, concerned about it because lack of control in their own lives and their own immoral behavior. And it comes out over and over and over again. People who yell and scream about...
Yeah, well, it's the same thing. I mean, their empathy, as it were, is inner-directed rather than outer-directed. During the Clinton impeachment, what was it, five of those Republicans were having affairs, two or three of them, including Newt Gingrich, with the members of their staff?
Yeah, I just don't understand. I just don't understand how the word empathy comes into it when what you're doing is you're reacting to your own bad behavior by attacking other people for theirs.
Well, you're empathetic with yourself. You're experiencing your own guilt feelings. You know how terrible that feels, and so you go after other people and say, "I don't want you to feel this terrible." I mean, I think ultimately we're all altruistic in our behavior at some level.
Mm-hmm.
You think I'm just contorting myself here?
I think what you're doing is you're trying to put lipstick on a pig, and that these people have no defense.
It may be. Jeff, thanks a lot. I appreciate your call, and I appreciate your comment. Always, that was Jeff from RadioLeft.com down there in Dallas, and be sure to listen to his programming. It's a great site and great programming. And, Jeff, I always appreciate your calls. You always make me think. The point of all of that is just, it was just this kind of off-the-cuff comment that Marianne made in a speech that she gave on Saturday, in which Marianne Williamson, who organized this conference for the Global Renaissance Alliance, which I'm a board member of, said this. Well, that's interesting. That's really interesting. I'd never thought of that before. So I wanted to share it with you. I learned something new, and I'd like to share it with you and do a reality check, bounce it off you. But let's get back to this issue here for the hour. How can, and in a way it really ties into the same thing. How can conservatives use the term or the phrase liberal elite when they are the princes of the liberal mindset. How can they do that? How, you know, well, certainly there's a certain element of misdirection, and you get there, you criticize your own behavior in somebody else, and then they can't, it makes it that much harder for them to point back at you. Because Joe McCarthy was the example of this. Nobody was successful when Joe McCarthy was out, you know, sticking his fingers in the chests of all these people, destroying careers left and right. Yeah, he did find a few communists, all of them, it turns out, people that other people in the government knew were communists, and with one or two possible exceptions. But at what cost? You know, tremendous harm done to this nation by Joe McCarthy and his witch hunt that Ann Coulter is now trying to completely whitewash with lies. There have been several very, very good articles done debunking Ann Coulter's book, Joe Connison being the best, Joe Connison's book, Big Lies. And you know, the extraordinary, and what he did was this strategy of accusing other people of a crime, and then nobody could accuse him of a crime. Even though he was an alcoholic and he was misbehaving in his personal life and he was misbehaving politically terrible, he had lied to the voters. When he campaigned in Wisconsin for the United States Senate, he had a picture taken in the back of a plane that was on the ground. They retouched it to make it look like it was in the air. He called himself Tail Gunner Joe. He had never been in one of those planes. He was not a combat vet. He claimed he was. I mean, you know, the guy's life was filled with lies. But he was so aggressive, nobody dared come back at him. So we see the conservative elite, the con elite, talking about the liberal elite. And there's some interesting articles just in this past week by conservatives who live in an elite world that is completely detached from reality that really illustrate this and illustrate it well. And then there's a whole bunch of news here that I have for you that really brings this out. Rich Tucker in the Heritage Foundation publication wrote a piece called A Wise Investment is Worth the Price. He claims this is about the $87 billion that Bush wants for Iraq. And he says, we don't have to roll back the tax cuts. We can pay for it out of the current budget. And we don't have to necessarily increase the deficit. We can just cut. Well, what are we going to cut? I mean, the core message, of course, here is why place a burden on the comfortable who just got their big tax cut, on the wealthy, when we can place that burden on the struggling, on the middle class and on the poor? I mean, what the heck? He talks about the farm bill. Let's go after that. Well, I have some problems with the farm bill. I might agree with him in some of those areas. He talks about there's $22.5 billion an increase in the budget in federal education spending. Now, this is an interesting one. Yeah, let's whack away at education spending. Let's get rid of the Medicare prescription drug benefit. Well, that's not even in the budget yet. What about the 4.1% raise for federal employees? Conservative elites don't tend to work as federal employees, unless it's kind of a sideline, like these multimillionaires who are in George Bush's cabinet. Right? Yeah, they draw a $100,000 salary, $200,000 salary, but yeah, Jon Snow is sitting on millions. Condoleezza Rice, millionaire. Colin Powell, millionaire. Donald Rumsfeld, multimillionaire. And so we could go after that. The conservative elites don't. The average social worker salary, for example, is $30,108. That's with a four-year college degree. $30,000 a year. 4.1% raise would be $1,234 a year for that person. Well, let's take that and use it to pay for the war in Iraq. Yeah, right. This rhetoric feeds into the conservative fear of government being this ominous separate entity, this paranoid worldview that Ayn Rand infected the United States with in the 1950s as a result of her having grown up as a child during the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia and coming here and never having studied civics or American government, not understanding, obviously never having read the Founding Fathers, and not understanding that this is a constitutionally limited democratic republic, that this is a government of we the people. The government is not an it. It is not a them. It is not some terrible dark force out there until it is seized by some other group. And some would say it has been. It's been seized by the corporations with this Bush administration. And I'd say, yes, to some extent that's true. But still, it is our government. The government is us in the United States. That was the unique feature of the creation of this government. And so it's easy to forgive Ayn Rand. She didn't grow up in this system. She went to college in the Soviet Union under Stalin. She studied, you know, government and politics in a Russian college. Of course, she had a skewed idea of how things are here. But that worldview has so badly infiltrated, infected, and damaged the worldview of the conservatives in the United States that you come up with these statements like Grover Norquist saying, you know, we don't want to destroy government. We just want to shrink it down to the size where we can drag it into the bathtub and drown it. And it's like the government is us. If it becomes large, it should become large because we decide it does. If it becomes small, it should become small because we decide it does. We, the people, through our elected representatives. And there must be a consensus for this. Most federal workers, I mean, they're the people living next door to you. They're your friends and family. And you know, and they're saying, well, you know, how can we? Here's another piece. The attempts temper tantrum takes the cake by Paul Jacob, claiming that temping is good for the worker and the employee. The message being that be thankful that employers are generous to give you enough to give you a job. Another part of the cheap labor con strategy that is destroying the fabric of American society. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
I have a question for the men out there. What do you think your odds are of developing prostate problems? 1 in 1,000? 1 in 300? Actually, my doctor told me they're 1 in 3. But you can help beat those odds with One-A-Day Men's Health Formula. One-A-Day Men's is a complete multivitamin with 21 nutrients plus lycopene, which Harvard studies have linked to prostate health. So now that you know your risk, help beat the odds. Take One-A-Day Men's Health, the multivitamin with more for your health.
The Business Trip by Super 8 Motels.
Somewhere between the last meeting and home, between 4 drive-thrus and the blob of ketchup on your favorite tie, between 60 dead bugs on your windshield, an empty window squirter, and a wiper blade gone awry. Somewhere between where you are and where you're going, there's a Super 8. See you along the way.
Call 1-800-800-8000 or visit super8.com. All Super 8 motels are individually owned and operated.
Boy, I remember the good old days.
Yeah, when was that?
2003, of course, when interest rates were at historic lows and we knew the economy was turning around. What an historic opportunity. We really jumped on it. How'd you do?
Well,
we needed to expand our manufacturing and warehousing, so we called General Steel Corporation and ordered buildings engineered for our area and to meet our needs. And with the stucco and rock products provided by the General, our buildings look great.
How will you look back at this historic opportunity? Small business owners know that now is the best time to build that new warehouse, manufacturing, or retail space. Whether you need a 60 by 200 foot building for under $50,000 or a 100 by 175 for under $98,000, call toll free 1-866-96-DEAL. If you need to expand your business, you need the General. If your church or school needs to build quickly and save money, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-DEAL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-DEAL today.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years on them.
Well,
a few more years.
No. I'm talking about now.
Like the tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Show.
Bill in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, posting on our message board. The doorbell rang, and I answered the door just as I finished posting how fed up I am with Bush. What a surprise. The guy standing in front of my door was very Republican look about him. His first words to me were, "Hi, I am your Republican precinct captain." Boy, has this guy got the wrong address, I said to myself. But not before I made it known to him that I consider Bush a menace to America. He started squirming and glancing around the front of my house. Our junkie responds. He says, "I remember when the only people we had to worry about meeting on our doorsteps were Jehovah Witness crusaders. Now we have right-wingers. That's really scary." How to scare off door-to-door Republican visitors. And Klaus adds, "Well, answering the door naked can have the desired effect."
For Christ's sake, will you cover yourself?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. In the next hour, by the way, right after the top of the news, right after the top of the hour, the news is the top of the hour, we're going to be giving away a copy of Unequal Protection, a book I wrote last year. That is now out and published by Rodale, a hardcover book, and it will be to the first person who can correctly answer a question that we will be asking. So just to let you know, we're going to do that. And but back to this issue of how can conservatives use the phrase liberal elite when they are the princes of the liberal mindset. Just wanted to wrap this up. So William F. Buckley just wrote an article called Tycoon Class, in which he's complaining about the fact that business class is the only way to fly on an airplane and get decent legroom, and the airlines charge too much for it. And so he's saying rich people should have discount prices. Not everybody should have legroom. I mean, this guy is really no longer living in the real world, I think. I'm not sure that he ever did, and I say that with some respect. If you haven't read Overdrive, which is William F. Buckley Jr.'s autobiography, it's brilliant. And I highly recommend it. It's 15 years old, but it's a fascinating book. ADHD in the fast lane from a successful guy who grew up in a wealthy family and is very politically astute and all that kind of thing. It's interesting. But anyhow, there's this other story here about, attempts temper tantrum takes the cake by Paul Jacob about how dare these temp workers complain. There's this huge, we have all these laws on the books in the United States that protect people against discrimination, that protect people from being exploited in terms of how much the work they do, you know, the overtime laws, that protect them from being capriciously fired, that require employers to have certain workplace safety protections, that basically protect that allow them to unionize in many states. All of these very specific protections. And the dream of the cheap labor conservatives is to get rid of these things because they can squeeze more profit out of the American worker, and this very, very small conservative elite can get more money. They can get richer. And at the expense of society, at the expense of our entire culture. And the way that they're doing it now is with this temp thing, temp help, or with outside contract. Yes, you are an independent contractor, a permanent independent contractor, but an independent contractor. And all of those protections are out the door instantly. Very slick way, and our government is doing it very effectively. The Bush administration has raised it to an art form, particularly in Iraq. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, talk radio for the rest of us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from sirens night and day, from the fires.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name Carl.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Residents along the nation's eastern seaboard are bracing for what some forecasters are already calling the storm of the decade, Hurricane Isabel. Correspondent Steve Sandberg's in New Jersey today with the latest.
The Jersey Shore is getting ready for Isabel.
This could be it. I mean, it's taken some characteristics on. I've been following it along with everybody, you know, as everyone has through the media. And it's got some things that no other storm has ever had.
Monmouth County Emergency Management Director Harry Conover says now is the time to stock up on emergency supplies, secure your property, keep an eye on the weather, and an ear out for evacuation warnings.
I don't want anyone to panic.
When Floyd pummeled New Jersey in 99, it had already been downgraded to a tropical storm. Isabel, a Category 4 hurricane, could strike the Garden State Thursday or Friday. Steve Sandberg in Belmar, New Jersey.
Another U.S. soldier was killed in Baghdad today. Coalition spokeswoman Sergeant Amy Abbott says the soldier died in a Baghdad hospital from wounds he suffered in the attack.
At 1:10 this morning, a soldier from the 1st Armored Division was wounded when a patrol was hit by a rocket-propelled grenade round. The soldier was then medically evacuated to the 28th Combat Support Hospital, where he died of his wounds. This happened in central Baghdad.
No one else was wounded in today's attack. Nearly 300 troops have now been killed since the U.S. invaded Iraq earlier this year. Jordan's King Abdullah is in the U.S. this week for talks to keep flagging Middle East peace efforts alive. On NBC's Today Show earlier, Abdullah criticized public speculation about Israel's apparent decision to take steps to remove Palestinian President Yasser Arafat.
Well, I think it sets a very dangerous precedent to either expel President Arafat or, God forsake, assassinate him at a time when we're trying to calm the situation and break the cycle of violence.
King Abdullah also said the alternative to peace is continued loss of life and destruction among both the Israelis and Palestinians.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all...
Feeling. Whoa, 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 feeling.
Just because I look like... doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking... you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
Investigators are still trying to figure out the identities of two children found floating in a retention pond in Orange County, Florida, early yesterday. A girl, 1 or 2 years old, was pronounced dead at the scene. A boy, believed to be about 5 years old, is currently hospitalized in critical condition. Divers will be back at that pond today to search for more clues. A man from Austin, Texas, could be facing federal charges for apparently causing a disruption on a United Airlines flight. 36-year-old Brian Eager reportedly paced the aisle during yesterday's flight, reading aloud from the Bible. Passengers subdued him until the flight landed in Los Angeles.
Mom, see you later.
Jason? Who else is going to the concert with you?
Anna and Kyle.
So you'll be home?
At 11.
Good. Make sure to call me if anything comes up, okay?
You know I never forget.
I know you don't. Now, about that music.
Yeah, isn't it awesome?
Well,
Let your kids be who they are, but know what they're doing. Talk, know, ask. Parents, the anti-drug. For more information, call 1-800-788-2800. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Today is the 40th anniversary of the fatal bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama. Reporter CRC Jones has details.
It was 1963. The 16th Street Baptist Church was a popular gathering place for African Americans pushing for change in the city's racially charged climate. Four girls were killed when a bomb exploded in the basement one Sunday morning. Three men were later convicted. Robert Chambliss, Thomas Blanton Jr., and Bobby Frank Cherry. Chambliss died in prison. Blanton and Cherry, however, remain jailed for their alleged connection to the crime. A ceremony honoring the victims will be held tonight at the church at 7 p.m. Charcy Jones, Birmingham.
And an arrest has been made now, police say, in the shooting death of Yetunde Price, the older half-sister of tennis stars Serena and Venus Williams. 24-year-old Aaron Michael Hammer was taken into custody in connection with the murder and is being held without bond now. Price was shot yesterday while riding in an SUV in Compton, south of Los Angeles. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Think of your favorite child. Now think of your favorite child again in your car. What can you do to ensure that child will live to become a favorite adult? When I come back, I'll tell you.
Okay, so you want one good reason to get LoJack installed in your car. Well, unfortunately, I can't give you that. But I can give you three. LoJack has a 90% recovery success rate. LoJack has helped recover over 100,000 vehicles worldwide. And LoJack is the only stolen vehicle recovery system used by the police. So if you still want just one good reason to get LoJack, that last one should do quite nicely. To find a dealer near you, visit LoJack.com. And keep it close.
How do you protect your most precious cargo? Safety seats, which reduce infant death risk by 69% and toddler by 47%. Infant seats from birth to 1 year should be installed rear-facing in the back seat. These often convert to front-facing for toddlers under 4 years and 40 pounds. Booster seats are suitable for children 4 to 8, but not until a child is over 80 pounds and 8 years old are regular seat belts proper restraints. Whatever their age, when you think of your favorite children, picture them buckled up, then do it. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends, patriots from coast to coast, border to border. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. You are in the Democracy Zone. Our quote for the day from Alexander Hamilton, one of the founders of this nation: those who stand for nothing fall for anything. Heard an interesting story about Alexander Hamilton over the weekend from Chris Largent, who is a historian, author, contributed along with me to the book Imagine What America Could Be Like in the 21st Century If We Did Everything Right, a book called Imagine, edited by Marianne Williamson. And you all know about the duel in 1804. Some interesting things about the 1804. In 1804... Jefferson was running for re-election as president, and he almost didn't win. And there was a period of time that was actually longer than the period of time during which Bush v. Gore was contested. And then repeated votes in the House of Representatives over and over and over again, or in the Electoral College, over and over and over again. There was a tie. And the tie was between Jefferson and Aaron Burr. And according to the Hamiltonians, those who revere Alexander Hamilton, and I have to tell you, until I heard this story, I was not one of them, and I'm still skeptical. But according to the story, Alexander Hamilton so well knew how toxic Aaron Burr was, what a dangerous man he was, and how he would destroy American democracy if he became elected president, because he was so interested in the interests of a narrow elite, and so opposed to the Jeffersonian concept of a people's government. That Alexander Hamilton, in order to make it clear to everyone what Aaron Burr was all about, in 1804, in the same year, after finally Jefferson got elected, Burr lost by one vote or a couple of votes, and Jefferson was installed as president for his second term, Alexander Hamilton challenged Burr to a duel. Now, Hamilton's son had died 3 years earlier in a duel. And Hamilton, for those 3 years, had been in this terrible deep depression. And his new focus of his depression had become Aaron Burr. Him thinking that Aaron Burr was just this horrible person, this terribly destructive person. And Hamilton was, in many regards, according at least to the story that I heard, not a pacifist in an anti-war way, but not somebody who would think that the way to solve a political problem is by killing somebody. So anyhow, he challenged Burr to a duel to be held on the same place where 3 years earlier his son had died in a duel, Hamilton's son. And it might even have been the same date. I don't recall. It seems as though it was, but I may be off on that. And Hamilton had once said to his son, in a duel, a gentleman always fires his first shot into the air. And Hamilton and Burr showed up for this duel. And unbeknown to anybody at the time, although it was learned afterwards, Burr had been practicing for weeks shooting at trees. Because back then, pistols weren't the most accurate things in the world. And they had the duel. You know, they took their 10 paces, turned. The duel master, whatever he's called, the person who's mediating or moderating the duel, says, fire. Hamilton fires into the air, and Burr fires right into Hamilton's chest and kills him. And this was the end of Burr's career, because now everybody realized that he was a cold-blooded killer. He wasn't the gentleman. He didn't fire in the air with the first shot. He killed his political opponent. And he was vilified. That was the end of it for Aaron Burr. And there are many who suggest that Hamilton wanted to die because he was so depressed over the death of his son 3 years earlier, that this was essentially a suicide by Hamilton, because the duel that he challenged Burr to was over a small comment that Burr had made a year earlier. And that he wanted to die in a way that was meaningful, that would reveal to the world how toxic Aaron Burr was, because Burr had almost become president of the United States. I thought that was a fascinating story. It's amazing the things you learn when you hang out with some of these folks. Our question, if you would like to win a copy of Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights, and I don't have a hardcover here in front of me, so I can't tell you what the price on the thing is, but it's a 20-some-odd dollar book. It's published by Rodale Publishers, and by yours truly, by me. The first person to call 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937, with the correct answer. And Char is there to take your calls. Char, our brilliant engineer and board operator, and one of the world's finest human beings. Char is there in Detroit, ready to take your call. And you call and make your choice, and the first person who has the correct answer will win the book, and they will mail it to you from Detroit. It'll have my signature. It'll be a signed first edition of the Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. Here's the question. Before the 2000 presidential election, Florida, and by the way, these questions came from disinfo.com, but please don't go check it out and get the right answer here. That wouldn't be fair. Before you got to dig for a ways to find it anyway. Before the 2000 presidential election, Florida Governor Jeb Bush and Secretary of State Katherine Harris ordered the removal of 90,000 citizens from voter rolls because they were supposedly felons. Remember that? I mean, this was the vote rigging that caused the Florida race to be so close between Gore and Bush. And then 2 years later, the vote rigging was still in place and allowed Jeb Bush to win the governorship in 2002 when the polls showed he was losing. Okay, again, before the 2000 presidential election, Florida Governor Jeb Bush and Secretary of State Catherine Harris ordered the removal of 90,000 citizens from voter rolls because they were supposedly felons. What percentage of them were actually felons? A, 100%. B, 97%. C, around 50%. Or D, 3%. Call 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937 if you think you know the right answer and you would like a book, and you can win a copy of Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. And if you would like, if you are the winning caller, we'll pop you on the air for a second. You have it. Shar has a winner. And is that person willing to go on the air, Shar? Okay, cool. Pop them on. Who is it? Hello? Hello there. It's going to take just a sec. Sometimes it takes a minute for Shar to push all those magic buttons on the control panel there. And we have a caller on the line. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, who is this?
This is Danny from Santa Fe.
Hey, Danny in Santa Fe. Let me state the question again. Before the 2000 presidential election, Florida Governor Jeb Bush and Secretary of State Catherine Harris ordered the removal of 90,000 citizens from voter rolls because they were supposedly felons. What percentage of them actually were felons? 100%, 97%, around 50%, or 3%? Which is it, Danny?
3%.
You're right. We're going to have to get some music for this if we're going to keep doing these. Only 3% of the 90,000 were felons. The other 87,300, most of whom were black or poor white, groups that tend to vote Democratic, purposely and illegally were deprived of their right to vote. The reporter who discovered the smoking gun documents, Greg Palast, tells about this and other stories he's uncovered in Exile on Mainstream and in Abuse Your Illusions, which is this thing from disinfo.com, and also in his book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. So you said Danny in Santa Fe?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. Any further thoughts on this, Danny, or comments you want to
make? Well, if you're going to sign it, put my wife's name on it, too, because she was part of the answer. It's Fiona.
Okay. I can't do that because they have the books in Detroit, and I'm in Vermont. So what
was
I signed some labels and shipped them to them, and they're slapping them in the books because the publisher sent them right to there in Detroit. But it will have my signature, and you have it with my blessings, and
well,
thank
you
for listening.
We've been looking forward to getting that book for some time.
Great. Well, I'm glad you got it.
We're very excited about getting the book, and we thoroughly enjoyed Greg Palast's Best Democracy Money Can Buy.
Yeah, he's brilliant. He's very good. Okay, thank you, Danny. I appreciate
it. Thank you.
Thank you
for your show.
Stay on the line. Thank you. If Shar has not already taken your mailing information, stay on the line so that she can pick it up from you, okay? She'll put you on hold, and then she'll pick up the phone. Okay, back to the program. Now that our contest... we have had a winner. How cool is that? People know right off the bat. 3%. Economists here. This from the Wall Street Journal. This was Friday's Wall Street Journal. I was on a plane to Washington, D.C. reading this thing. And it so impressed me that I clipped it out and brought it with me. The U.S. economy in the second half of this year is expected to grow at its strongest pace in almost 4 years. This is the economic projections. They're projecting a seasonally adjusted annual growth rate of 4.7% during this quarter we're in right now, and 4% in the fourth quarter. There's 53 different economists who came up with this. The last time growth was close to that was the second half of 1999, which was the strongest quarter of all of the Clinton years. And at that time, growth was around 6%. Growth has been moving upward. The original the estimate for August was 3.6%. And now they're saying 4.7%. This is a huge boom. See, those of you who think that George W. Bush is going to lose in 2004, just no matter who we feel, no matter what happens, he's toast. Everybody realizes he lied about Iraq. It's a mess. People are dying, and the economy's in the toilet. I'm telling you, this guy is the kind of politician who will do or say anything regardless of the truth, first of all, as we have seen so many times, the Clear Skies Initiative that allows 17,000 plants to produce more air pollution. And he calls this the Clear Skies, and as part of his Clear Skies Initiative. The No Child Left Behind program that actually cuts back on most of the services vital to education and only increases one thing, which is testing, and those tests are only supplied by one source, and that's three very large corporations that give contributions to Republicans. And this is a multi-hundred million dollar scheme. So here we've got this incredibly corrupt president and an administration. And they have pulled out all the stops. Greenspan has the Fed fund rate down to almost nothing. It's so low, it's frightening. I mean, you know, down to 1%. Everybody is converting their home equity into cash because they have to. I mean, they're just, you know, the middle class is collapsing. And billions. We just spent $70 billion in Iraq, and a fair amount of that is going to come back to the United States because it's going to these large defense contractors. The money comes back, it flows into the economy, boom, instant stimulus. It's not the good kind of stimulus, because when bombs are made, they're gone. When bridges are built in Iraq, it doesn't help the American economy, other than that short little burst. So we're getting this pump, this burst, and it's going to be just in time for the election, mark my words. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
As your boss, I've noticed you've been dragging at work lately. So, take tomorrow off. Here, take the company tickets to the game. Box seats okay? And take my car.
In the guy's perfect world, you'd have it all. Well, now you can. Because Domino's introduces Philly Cheesesteak Pizza. Guys like Philly Cheesesteak, guys like Domino's Pizza. Get your medium Philly Cheesesteak Pizza for $9.99, and you can get any second medium for just $5 more. Get the door. It's new Domino's Philly Cheesesteak Pizza. Limited time offer. Prices and terms may vary. You must ask for this offer when ordering.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
A few years ago, a Japanese official was arrested after police discovered 400 pieces of women's underwear in his home. He proclaimed innocence by saying, "I picked up all lingerie on the streets by pure chance." We still have our underwear in America, but we've been stripped of a garment far more precious, our democracy. We've been able to hold our diverse and sprawling country together over the decades because of one thing. Our people's ingrained belief in America's democratic values of fairness, justice, and opportunity for all. But something has gone terribly wrong in our country. The essence of democracy, our power to control the decisions that affect us, has steadily been pilfered by corporate kleptocrats. They've collected up our democratic powers piece by piece, taking these powers into their own private fiefdoms. These elites, backed by the political elites they've bought, now effectively control everything from our wages to war, from what's on the news to who gets elected. This has not taken place by pure chance, but through deliberate filching, which has now devolved into wholesale looting. These thieves in high places, as I call them in my new book, have pulled off a slow-motion coup, radically wrenching America from being a people's republic to kleptocrat nation. This would be horribly depressing, except for one thing that definitely has not changed in our land.
the people. You rascals still have that tenacious belief in America's historic democratic values. As I crisscross our country, I am buoyed by the fact that ordinary folks everywhere are lighting little prairie fires of rebellion against the thieves, fighting for everything from living wages to fair trade, privacy to peace. This is Jim Hightower saying, this truly is America's story. The story of grassroots people agitating and organizing to take America back from those thieves in high places.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. You're in the Democracy Zone. Economists predict GDP growth will be fastest since late 1999. I think this thing is going to be moving along. By the way, just a
minute. Has brought this planet to the brink, but specifically, our destructive addiction to one single resource may push us over the edge.
Leonardo DiCaprio
that
here.
That resource is oil. Oil is essentially ancient sunlight. Since the dawn of time, plants captured sunlight. After billions of years of decomposing in the earth, this...
And on it goes, the story. A new movie produced, partly written by, and narrated by Leonardo DiCaprio, a movie that's available for free on the Internet, that you can see by going to www.leonardodicaprio.com. And when you get to the very end of the movie, you will see that it is inspired by a book I wrote back in 1997 called The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. And that, by the way, is going to be reissued. It's in print right now. You can find it in paperback. But we've got a new and improved 2003 edition that's coming out in January or February. Basically, we updated the statistics and things in it. But anyway, I was just amazed. I remember, it seems like almost a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, we got a call from Leonardo DiCaprio's office saying that he wanted to make a movie based on or inspired by my book. And it was like, whoa, what an honor. Flew out to L.A. I met his mother. I met his grandmother. I met with him. And now the thing is out. And you can see it free on the web. LeonardoDiCaprio.com, and just click on the thing called Global Warning. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, and Mark is in Dallas. Mark, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing, Tom?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you, Mark?
I'm hanging in there as well. Still unemployed, but that's another topic. Two quick things. One's breaking. I just saw on Democratic Underground that a panel of three judges in California has stayed the recall vote for an indefinite period of time in California.
Oh, hang on just a second. Stayed? You mean they put the recall on
hold? They postponed it.
Why?
Apparently there was a lawsuit, and I don't have any further details, but that's what's being reported on the news wires, that it's been postponed from the October 7th date.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm going to have to check the...
Yeah, DG is pretty reliable on this kind of stuff. Anyway, what I really want to call about, in a perfect segue from the DiCaprio movie, actually, did you hear the reports over the weekend from the Sunday Times in London that the David Kay WMD report is going to be indefinitely shelved because apparently it shows there were actually no WMDs, and this would be very embarrassing for the UK and the U.S.?
Yeah, there's a folk. One of the folks in our chat room had just posted a link to that and had mentioned. In fact, are you in the chat room?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay. Because you're saying almost exactly what somebody had said in there a little earlier, and in fact, I'd intended to mention it when I read it, and then you know the show goes on and my brain goes off in some other direction, and I completely forgot. I think I would have gotten back to it, but said that the David Kay report. In fact, they had the language from it was reported in the Times of London, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah. That it's been indefinitely postponed. I mean, time will tell. We'll see. It was over the weekend. I could be wrong because I didn't watch them. I just saw some transcripts. I think Cheney again was referring to the fact that these guys are over there. Just wait. I mean, they're all like, you know, on bated breath. You know, they figure if anybody can find that stuff or maybe even, you know, take the FedEx delivery, it'll be David Kay. And, you know, particularly given his background with the intelligence service. But interesting. It's going to be real interesting to see if they completely blew it.
Take care.
Mark, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Thanks very much. Have a great day now. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, where democracy is still alive and well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Cooperative approach to solving water shortages could help keep rival users out of court. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Conflicts over fresh water are becoming more common and will only get worse, according to an analyst for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. William Wierick says growing population in the West and South are putting a strain on resources. Wierick has been working with a collaborative method to resolve water conflicts. It's called shared vision planning, and it involves everyone with a stake in the outcome working together on a computer model of the disputed water resource.
So that you have environmental groups, government regulation agencies, user groups, and stakeholders, they all work together with kind of a computer alternative to reality where people can try out solutions without any risk that any real damage will occur.
Wierick says participants can see what happens if an upstream community takes more water from a river or farms ramp up their irrigation.
Model a watershed, develop alternatives, even some crazy ones if you want to, and see what the impacts of that are. And because you do this with such a broad array of people, stakeholders, experts, decision makers, you're more apt to look at the impacts that people really care about.
Wierick says shared vision planning is still fairly experimental, but he says it already helped in a dispute between Georgia, Alabama, and Florida.
When we first applied shared vision planning, the states were ready to go back to court. And shared vision planning was certainly an important part of stopping that process and leading them to the development of interstate compacts, which all three governors and the President of the United States signed.
Wierick says the planning technique is also being used in a dispute over the Nile River in Africa. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network. We'll be right back.
the best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Propagandy, propagandy. Try and convince the folks that beach is never sandy. You can convert into lies what they've seen with their own eyes. It's amazing. Propagandy. Life is so complex, so confusing. Everyone's just trying to make ends meet. You can brighten up my day, keep the facts out of my way. Just simplify the complex, repeat, repeat, repeat.
Alexander Hamilton provided us with our quote for the day. Those who stand for nothing fall for anything. And increasingly, across America, people are saying, I'm not going to stand for nothing or fall for anything. I am going to stand for something. I'm going to stand for democracy in the United States. I'm going to stand for a return to the values that this republic was founded on. Uncommon Sense in the Radical Middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. The story here from today's New York Times electronic edition, I just brought it up while we were on the air. A federal appeals court postponed California's October 7 gubernatorial recall election, ruling the historic vote cannot proceed as scheduled because, now get this, some votes would be cast using outmoded punch card ballot machines. As if over the weekend, when I was in Washington, I was speaking with a fellow whose father was one of the founders or one of the major participants, big-time players in Columbia Pictures. And he was telling me how they lived in Beverly Hills, and he was talking about when he was growing up. And he's my age, and I'm assuming, you know, in his 50s. And he said he remembered when he was a kid that his home was a polling station. Now, my earliest recollections of voting are in Michigan when I turned 21 whatever year that was, 72. My earliest recollections of voting are that it was done in schools. But he said in Beverly Hills, it was in his father's home. And his father was a Republican and his mother was a Democrat. Really. And people would, and all over Los Angeles, people's homes were voting places, and there were lots and lots of them. And you came in and you voted on a piece of paper, you marked your preference, and then when it was done, there was a person from the county, a volunteer actually, and there was a volunteer from the Republican Party, and a volunteer from the Democratic Party, which was in this case his mother and father, who checked the ballots, who counted them and made sure that they were all there and they were all clean and then sealed them up in a box to go off to the county. So there was all these different levels of check, right? In other words, people came in, they voted, and then after the vote was done, the vote was counted in the presence of two people representing both parties who could challenge, you know, a ballot if somebody said, hey, this says Democrat, no, it says Republican. And those votes then were, you know, and there was a paper trail, and if there was ever an audit, it could be reread. And it doesn't much matter how quickly it's done, does it? I mean, we vote, the first Tuesday of November? And when do people take office? In January. I mean, there's enough time to figure this stuff out. In Germany today, they vote this way. They vote on a piece of paper by marking an X in a circle next to the candidate's name. And it's not counted by machine. It's counted by hand, by volunteers who have civic pride. They're interested. They care. They want to help out. They want to participate. We could, instead of spending the $4 billion that the federal government threw into the pot to put computerized electronic riggable voting machines in every precinct and every place all across the United States, we could go back to the way that we used to do it. And in my opinion, eliminate fraud. It'll take a little bit longer and save a pile of money. Why do we need machines? In fact, as Mayor Daley showed us in Chicago, the old, original, the 1960s voting machines could be manipulated and rigged very easily. And they were. And there's no shortage of examples of times that they were. And so then we went to the punch cards, and then the punch cards, of course, had to be read by an electronic machine, and that machine could be rigged. So there may be good news in this. There may be bad news in this. The bad news may be that what's ultimately going to happen is they're going to have time now to put into place voting machines with back doors that are open via modem. As we saw in the 2002 election, this story that just came out last week about how I forget the city. I want to say San Luis Obispo, but I'm sure I'm wrong. It's a city in California that the machines, the voting machines in that city, in the middle of the afternoon, all decided to phone home, like E.T. And either they dialed up the Diebold main office, the company that installed the machines, or somebody at Diebold called them up, and they got a total. Now, nobody so far is alleging that that was part of a process of actually changing the number of votes that the machines were recording. But assuming that this had nothing to do with trying to actually rig the vote, what are the implications for democracy if halfway through the voting day, in the middle of the afternoon, the polls are going to be open until 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night, if at 3 o'clock in the afternoon or 2:30 in the afternoon, the people in the polling office who might be operatives for the Republicans or Democrats or Greens or whatever, those people know which way the vote is going in each county so that they can call up the local, let's say it's the Democrats. Let's be as unbiased as we can. We got a Democrat, a secret Democrat working for Diebold. They phone up the machines. They see that the vote, the Republicans at 2:30 in the afternoon have 200 more votes than the Democrats do out of 20,000 votes. So what do? They call the Democratic headquarters and they say, you gotta do a get out the vote thing. And so they've got 100 cars all set to go, and they know the houses of people who probably couldn't vote, people who are, in wheelchairs or whatever. But, if you really want to put the effort, they'll go to the polls and they'll vote, the registered voters. And you go out and you get them to the polls, and boom, you can win. And then nobody's alleging that was done either. But these are two different levels of vote fraud that could be done, or vote manipulation, let's say, as the result of electronic voting machines, modem-connected, computerized, Windows-operating system-based computerized voting machines. And so apparently now this court in California has said the election is on hold until these punch card machines, which actually produce a paper trail. I mean, they really did actually recount the punch cards in Florida and discovered that Al Gore got more votes than George W. Bush if you counted the entire state. They actually did that. Knight Ridder and New York Times and Washington Post paid for it. It took 6 months. It came out just after 9/11. It came out, as I recall, in late November, and it was reported in the newspapers. Al Gore won Florida. Because there was and they were able to report it because there was a paper trail. And they are going to replace these punch card machines because it is outmoded. Oh, do we have a bizarre relationship with new and improved in the United States? Do we have a love affair with technology that is just biting us in the butt? They're going to replace these punch card machines, which, yeah, there may be problems there. We've got the situation in a county in Cobalt County, Texas, where three different candidates, three conservative Republican candidates, all won their seats by exactly 18,181 votes in one county. It defies any statistical probability. I mean, statisticians are going, what? And there are those who are suggesting that the machines that counted the votes weren't actually counting votes. They were actually hooked up to random number generators to create something that looked like a vote. Nice, clean, random numbers, so there's no patterns that you see anywhere. But whoever programmed the random number generators, you have to see to start a random number generator, it doesn't just start from X. X isn't a number. It's a value. So you have to actually have a number to seed the random number generator. Those of you who know math and computers know what I'm talking about. And apparently the random number generators used in Koval or Duval County, Texas, where three different conservative candidates all received 18,181 votes each, exactly. The random number generator that was counting that vote or rigging that vote had been seeded with the number .000055. If you have a computer, open your calculator, or if you have a calculator on your desk, type in .000055 and then push the key that has the 1 over X, 1 slash X key. And you will get 18181, comma, 18181, you know, on into infinity. And this was with punch card ballots, because the machines reading the punch card ballots are also computers and can also be programmed, and they're also modem connected in many cases, apparently particularly in Texas. In Texas, there were so many voting irregularities in 2002 and 2004. So many cases of people pushing the Democrat button and ending up their vote being recorded for Republicans that are well documented. I wrote a lengthy article about this for MoveOn.org that was sent out to 1.7 million people last month. You can find it if you go to TomHartmann.com and just click up at the top on the articles about democracy. You can find it. It's something like, you know, the theft of your vote is just a chip away. And so now in California, instead of saying, okay, we got this recall, we want to make sure that this thing is right, let's set it up, let's just go to paper. Forget the machines. Let's do it the old-fashioned way. Let's do it the way the modern Europeans do it. Let's use paper. Or, you know, at least let's use punch cards. I mean, we've got the technology figured out. We know the bugs of it. We know its weaknesses. We know its strengths. We know that there are errors, but we know how to fix them. And there's always a paper trail that you can track down. No, 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 they say no. The big voting machine companies, one of which was founded by a family who is connected to the Christian Identity Movement and believes that the United States Constitution should be replaced by the Bible, one of which, whose former president was Chuck Hagel, United States Senator, Republican, former Bush campaign operative, one of which has a former business partner of Dick Cheney on its board of directors. No, these voting companies, these voting machine companies, all of whom who say, you, the people, we, the people, have no right to see the inside of their machines or know what their software says or how their machines work because they have constitutional rights under the Fourth Amendment because they're persons. Nonsense. But they claim it. They say, no, we shouldn't have this recall until we've got our electronic machines in place. Now, why do you think that might be? Ben in Illinois, I wonder what your thoughts are on this. Ben's called 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Hey, Ben, what's up?
As you know, I'm a computer guy.
Right. Yeah, and, in fact, you run the right WhiteRoseSociety.org.
Correct.
Site, do you not? Yes, I hope it's okay that I outed you there.
Oh, that's fine. Everyone knows who I am.
Yeah, we're very pleased, by the way, that you keep a three-week archive of this program on WhiteRoseSociety.org. It's a marvelous website. I encourage people to visit it. And we have so many people around the world now who can't listen between noon and 3 Eastern time who listen to the program every day by listening to the archives on your site. It is great. Thank you.
You're very welcome. In fact, there's like 84 countries in my logs that have shown up to obtain shows.
Wow, in the last year, the last...
And since March. Month?
Since March.
84 different countries, yeah, including places like Burkina Faso that you wouldn't think had more than two computers.
To listen to this show?
Yes, well, yours or
Mike's,
I can't tell which.
That's wonderful. Okay, so Ben, your point about the voting machines.
Okay, two things. First of all, you know, as a computer guy, elementary accounting principles, if you were to try to push this computerized voting machine past an accountant who had to apply generally accepted accounting principles, he'd have to kick it out.
Sure.
Number one. Number two, what concerns me most about what's going to happen next November is I think we are going to see rampant destruction of these voting machines by people who are going to assume it's a rigged job, and who understand that it only takes about 700 grams of pressure on that glass plate to crack it.
You mean vandalism?
PDAs.
You mean people walking in to vote with a hammer in their pants or something?
You can do it with your thumbs.
Huh.
Think of it. Go get a broken Palm Pilot sometime and push down on the screen and see how easy it is to crack it.
Yeah, but these are on CRTs. It takes a lot of pressure to crack a CRT. Palm Pilots have a plastic face.
Oh, true. With a CRT where you've got the capacitive membrane, all you really need there is to have a nail file, and you scratch the membrane up one side, and you've broken the contact.
Hmm.
These people.
God forbid anybody should think we are giving people instructions. We are complaining about the limitations of the technology.
I'm saying that it's very easy. If you think you're going to be the one side or the other, Republicans or Democrats, if they think they're going to have the machines rigged against them, they are far easier to destroy in a covert way that you probably could get out of the polling place before anyone realized what had happened.
Yeah.
Then people may believe, and I've already seen suggestions in chat rooms on the internet that folks do just this, and that concerns
me
greatly.
One of the things that I find real interesting is I've written a lot of short op-ed pieces for CommonDreams.org over the years on a bunch of different topics, and it's interesting to see which ones get picked up on the right-wing sites. The one I wrote about the parallels between the rise of the Bush administration and the rise of Nazi Germany when democracy failed, mostly that showed up on the right-wing sites so that they could make fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
Other pieces that I've written, if they have problems with them, they talk about. But the pieces that I've written about voting machines are almost as well represented on right-wing websites as they are on left-wing websites. I think that this is an issue that is absolutely nonpartisan. Everybody is concerned about the theft of our vote. Absolutely everybody.
And hold me over because I have more things to say.
Okay, I'll do that. So hang on to the line. We got a commercial break coming up. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Boy, I can't believe I didn't do it. I really miss the boat. Interest rates were at historic lows. I knew the economy was turning around. I could have called General Steel and saved a ton of money on the building I needed, and I'd be ready for the new economy. Yep, I really blew it.
Will this be you? Perhaps a year from now. Let General Steel Corporation show you how to take advantage of this unique moment in history. A steel building from the General will save you time and money compared to conventional construction. And you can hold your building delivery for up to 1 year with a small deposit. Small business owners know that now is the best time to build and prepare for the new economy. Whether you need a 60 by 200 foot building for under $15,000 or 100 by 175 for under $98,000, call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need manufacturing or warehouse space, you need the General. If your church or school needs to expand quickly and save money, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL. This moment in history won't last forever. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Can we hope to achieve real progress while corporations wield control over our government and many civic institutions? At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we believe revoking illegitimate corporate power is a prerequisite for making genuine progress on the issues that affect us all. If you'd like to help restore citizen authority over corporations, get involved. Visit us at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places, a ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're gonna kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Tanya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Come on!
Show.
According to Abbas, immediately after Bush promised to speak with Sharon about the siege on Arafat, Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then God instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. When God specifically whispers in someone's ear, I want you to go kill those people, and they go ahead and kill somebody. What do we do with those folks? We arrest them, they are jailed, in some instances, executed. We immediately identify them as crazy. You know, Ashcroft is going to say,
wait a second, George. God has been talking to me. God told me. Not you. God told me. These people are crazy.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
So they're coming to take me away.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Looking in your eyes, I see a paradise. This world that I found is too good to be true. Standing here beside you.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Uncommon sense from the radical middle. The election in California, it appears the recall election has been postponed because they don't yet have in place, in enough places, electronic voting machines of, in the opinion of many, including your host, dubious veracity, dubious accuracy, dubious security, actually, I think is the largest issue. And Ben, you were making a final point there, and then I got Mark in Santa Fe, and we've only got about 3 minutes in this segment.
Okay, yeah, the point is that I really think that the paranoia that is, justified paranoia that is developing about these voting machines could easily be manipulated by one side or the other to convince radical elements to go out and do what I describe, which is to destroy the machines, you know, at the polling places, and then play into Bush's hands and allow him to get the election nullified and declare a state of emergency.
Oh, you mean the 2004 election at a national level? Oh, my. Oh, that could be a real mess.
You know, these are the same people who release a million minks on the local environment or burn down ski lodges.
You mean the activist mindset?
Yeah.
What you're talking about? Yeah, yeah. Or burn, or painted Hummers and, yeah.
Exactly right.
Interesting, interesting. Well, Ben, as the old Chinese curse goes, we live in interesting times. I would have loved to have been alive in 1776, but I think other than that, this would be my second choice right now. Fascinating times. Ben, thanks for the call. I appreciate your comments and your feedback. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. We've got just a minute or so left here. Mark in Santa Fe is on the line. Mark, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, Tom, very briefly. Truthout, June 2nd, 2003, truthout.org. There was an article
said that Representative Rush Holt introduces legislation to require all voting machines to produce a voter-verified paper trail.
Yes.
I encourage you to check it out. It was so positive when I read it. He has five particular points that would require all voting systems to produce a voter-verified paper record.
I'm familiar with it, Mark. I wrote an article about it. You can find it on my website.
What's the progress on that?
He doesn't have enough sponsors to get the thing out of committee yet. Contact your local representative or your national representative officials and tell them that you want them to support Rush Holt's bill to make the electronic voting machines secure, and they'll know what you're talking about. So this is where we need to get active as we the people. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, talk radio for the rest of us.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities like Ted Nugent.
Everybody's got to learn to support hunting, fishing, and trapping because that's where the dollars come from to save habitat.
You know, every time he gets done talking, I feel like I should say amen.
But because I live the truth. That's what my book, God, Guns, and Rock and Roll, it's on the New York Times bestseller list. It sounds like I'm bragging because I am.
I love the book, Ted.
Thank you. It's like we're at a damn campfire, isn't it?
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Tom Roberts. Hurricane Isabel is churning in the Atlantic Ocean, seemingly making a beeline for the East Coast. The latest reports indicate it has weakened just a bit, with winds measuring about 140 miles an hour. Hardware and home supply stores in Virginia Beach are experiencing a rush as jittery residents prepare for Isabel. Dave Taylor is the manager of the Lowe's store there.
It kind of started Saturday afternoon, and then yesterday you could really see it picking up in the preparation items, your batteries and flashlights. Sold out of generators very quickly.
Taylor says an amazing number of people are stunned that hurricane preparation items are already selling out. South Korea is surveying the damage left behind from this past weekend's massive typhoon. It slammed into the southern portion of that country last Friday, killing at least 91 people. More than 20 others are still missing. Damage estimates exceed $1 billion. A U.S. soldier was killed in Baghdad today. Coalition spokeswoman Sergeant Amy Abbott says the soldier died in a hospital after the attack.
At 1:10 this morning, a soldier from the 1st Armored Division was wounded when a patrol was hit by a rocket-propelled grenade round. The soldier was then medically evacuated to the 28th Combat Support Hospital, where he died of his wounds. This happened in central Baghdad.
73 American troops have now been killed in hostile action in Iraq since major combat was declared over on May 1st. An arrest has been made in connection with the shooting death of Yetunde Price, the oldest sister of Venus and Serena Williams. Los Angeles County Sheriff's Deputy Bill Spear says the suspect is being held without bail.
Further investigation of this case uncovered circumstances which led to the arrest of Aaron Michael Hammer. He's a male, white, 24 years old, as a suspect in the shooting death of Miss Price. He has been arrested and is being held without bail at the Century Regional Detention Facility in Los Angeles.
Price was shot while riding in an SUV after investigators say she had been involved in some sort of confrontation with Compton neighborhood residents. More in a moment.
They left their farms and factories, their offices and classrooms. 16 million Americans in uniform. 400,000 gave their lives for freedom. For the first time, young women eagerly entered the workforce to supply the arsenal the world depended on for victory. But this was no faceless mass that went to war. They were my relatives and yours, our fathers and mothers, our grandparents and next-door neighbors. They were our family's heroes. And yet, unbelievably, there's no national monument anywhere to honor the amazing generation that won World War II. I'm Tom Hanks. Please help build the National World War II Memorial on the Mall in Washington, D.C. Call 1-800-639-4WW2. That's 1-800-639-4992. It's time to say thank you.
A public service message from the American Battle Monuments Commission, the Ad Council, and this station.
A suspected suicide bomber blew up a truck outside security offices near Repel, Chechnya today. At least three people were killed and another two dozen were injured in a fresh setback for Moscow's peace plan for the region. Iran says it is committed to the international treaty intended to stop the spread of nuclear arms. The move relieves fears that Iran might follow North Korea, which is admitted to developing enriched uranium for weapons. Energy Secretary Spencer Abraham is pleased with the resolution, which he says shows that the international community wants to prevent another North Korean-style crisis. More after this.
We'll be back with more music, but first a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
The book written by the man who led the D.C. area sniper investigation is not exactly flying off store shelves despite being its first day on sale. 3 weeks in October details former Montgomery County, Maryland Police Chief Charles Moose's days during the sniper manhunt. At several bookstores in the D.C. area, sales are steady but slower than anticipated. One Maryland woman says she's eager to get the inside account of what went on during the investigation.
It totally disrupted people's lives, and a lot of people let people get away with it. And I want to read and find out why.
Moose was forced to resign his position in order to publish the book. Are Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez really on the out? Several reports indicate the two have canceled their wedding plans and have split. Affleck was seen living it up in Las Vegas over the weekend while Lopez is in Miami. Santa Fe, New Mexico has been named the healthiest city in the country by Organic Style magazine. It beat a field of 120 other cities researched by the magazine for factors such as air pollution. I'm Tom Roberts, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Yesterday, in Brakes 101, master cylinders, calipers, and pads were demystified. You learned they are a lot like hearts, muscles, and skin, all designed to stop cars and save lives. When I come back, it's Brakes 102.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas. Every summer, callers on the Car Clinic Network ask what's causing that odor when I turn on my air conditioner. And the answer? Bacterial growth in the AC system. The good news is there's an ingenious process from BG Products that cleans and disinfects your entire ventilation system without having to dismantle it. You'll breathe easier with a BG ventilation service and your car will smell like new. To find a shop that performs this service, go to bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com.
Welcome to Brakes 102 at Car Clinic College. Today's lesson, analog braking systems, or ABS. Ever pressed the brake and nothing? You just pumped and hoped for the best? Hope no more. The best is here. Computer-controlled ABS. This system monitors the speed of individual wheels and applies precise braking power to each. And if any brake starts to lock or slows at a different rate than the others, that specific brake is automatically pumped or pulsed to prevent lockup. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. John Ashcroft on the run. We should have had that. What's the bumper song for that? On the run. I don't remember anyway. I can't sing. U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft, this is an Associated Press story.
should not be required to appear in federal court to explain why he broke the law. Excuse me. Why he violated a judge's gag order during a terrorism trial. Do the crime, do the time, is the subhead. Ashcroft tries to hide from court testimony, the headline in this story by the Associated Press, dated September 13, 2002. That is what, yesterday? Sorry, no, it's Saturday? Friday? Friday, yeah. 2 weeks ago, U.S. District Judge Gerald Rosen ordered Ashcroft to respond to a motion filed by lawyers for three men who were convicted in June on various charges. The lawyers had comments by Ashcroft made during the trial, praising a government informant had jeopardized their client's right to a fair trial. And Ashcroft, he didn't show up, he hasn't responded, and are they going to send out the cops to drag him in? The chief law enforcement officer of the United States saying, no, I think I'll ignore the law. Of course, it wouldn't be the first time. It wouldn't be the first time. Attorney General John Mitchell was very good at that. And many suggest that Ashcroft has been ignoring the law again, this campaign law. It's illegal for a member of the executive branch who's not an elected official. That is, the cabinet members, like Ashcroft, the head of the Justice Department, it's illegal for them to engage in campaign activities. It's a crime. It's against the law. So what's Ashcroft doing? Stumping in battle states, in these states where the Republicans are very concerned about the vote, to tell people, all is well, don't worry, I'm a nice guy, you know, it's before these photo op, hand-selected groups, mostly police officers. Well, I promised you in the third hour we would get into this discussion of Vietnam. What is Vietnam going to be? You know, Waterloo, I guess, is a tired cliche, but is Vietnam going to be? I'm sorry, is Iraq going to be Bush's Vietnam? Is it going to be? Is this going to be the thing? Or is he going to somehow use it? I mean, keep in mind, Vietnam was a very powerful, positive political tool for two presidents, for Richard Nixon and for LBJ, for much of their presidencies, and only finally became a negative at the very end there. What are your thoughts on this? I've got some information to share with you, some clips from LBJ, all from the same day, some interesting stuff here. But before we get to that, Robert in Washington, D.C. has called about the voting machines we were talking about the last hour. We can carry that topic across also. You're always welcome to call about anything you'd like. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Robert, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. I wanted to add to what Ben was saying, and, you know, typically Ben is able to come to really brilliant conclusions by weighing what's out there, and I've been essentially, without patting myself on the back, was thinking exactly the same thing, but after studying this quite a bit and preparing to do some writing of my own, I've realized that the security problems with these voting machines, what he was talking about was only the tip of the iceberg, the sledgehammer, compared to all the scalpels that could be wielded to upset the process. You've probably looked at some of the ways that you can, through the internet, engage in what they call man-in-the-middle attacks, where they can essentially find a way to intercept the data that's going back and forth between the machine and, you know, the central areas that where they, you know, tabulate and put all the results together.
Now the way, Robert, that some of these companies and machines have tried to get around that is by, for example, in Georgia, is they stored all that information on flash memory cards, and then they physically went around and collected the memory cards from the machines. Although in Atlanta, predominantly Democratic Atlanta, a whole bunch of those cards controlling the vote or containing the votes. My memory tells me it was either 27 or 37 cards, vanished.
Mm-hmm.
after the day of the vote and showed up like a day or two later. Nobody knows where they were or who handled them, but their votes were ultimately counted. And contrary to the polls, the Republicans won, even though the Democrats seemed to have the majority of people telling the pollsters that they were voting for them. I'm personally and strongly of the opinion that something was very wrong with the vote in the state of Georgia in 2002. But I interrupted you anyhow.
Yeah, not a problem. I mean, yes, and that is one method, but obviously from a security standpoint, unless you're going to hire a Brinks armored car to take every single card and track it at every step along the way, you know, there's plenty of holes in that security too.
Sure.
The bottom line is that from a security standpoint, and anyone who takes the time to look at it, and I'm sure if Ben researches it, he'll find the same thing, and you probably already know, that this is the equivalent of taking a big bag of money and putting it out in the middle of the street. Anyone with any computer savvy at all is going to have all sorts of ways. Any hacker in the country or someone who has just a little bit of skill in that area is going to be able to play havoc with this system, and it is a disaster waiting to happen. And
I agree, Robert, and it's not just a big bag of money. We're talking about the wealth of the United States of America. Look at the hundreds of billions of dollars worth of public lands, public minerals, public resources that are being handed to the corporate cronies of the Bush administration in this most incredibly corrupt administration. You know, the crony capitalism has been elevated to an art form we haven't seen since the Ulysses S. Grant administration here.
Exactly.
And, I mean, it's not just a bag of money. It is, we are talking about trillions of dollars. I mean, well, Bush handed $1.6 trillion to his rich buddies just in the form of a tax cut, much less everything else. We're talking about multiple trillions of dollars that our children will have to pay for in both short-term and long-term gains that whoever ends up controlling this country can get if they are sufficiently unscrupulous, as apparently these people are.
Right, and if you think this administration hasn't already thought up a way to spin this so as to make it look like the computer-savvy Dean supporters are the most likely culprits, well, I got a bridge to sell you.
Well, I think that would be great. I think it would be wonderful if the conservatives started getting very nervous about the computer-savvy Dean supporters, because then they would stop this insanity of these computerized voting machines.
I still think that either way, this administration is going to use it as an excuse to maintain power come the next election. I really believe,
there's no doubt in my mind they're going to try.
Yeah. I really believe that we have to find some way to get them out legally and peacefully before then.
Yeah. Well, before then, it's not going to happen because it requires a majority of the House and Senate to bring forward articles of impeachment. And for that matter, you know, Cheney is Bush's ace in the hole. I mean, you impeach Bush and look what you've got. So I think we really need to be focusing on 2004. And frankly, I think between the articles that I published on Common Dreams and Alternet and MoveOn.org, which these three articles over the last 2 years that have been literally, you can go into Google and, you know, just type in my name and the phrase voting machine, and you'll see that there's tens of thousands, maybe 100,000 or so hits out there. I haven't done it in a couple of months, but they're just all over the place. People are, and not just my articles, of course. I'm not the only one writing on this. Mine were some of the early ones that got the largest distribution. But Rebecca Mercury writing about it, Lynn Landis writing about it, David Dill writing about it. There's a whole bunch of folks, and this led to Rush Holt getting involved and introducing H.R., 2239? And on it goes. So I think that we should be encouraging conservatives to be paranoid about the computer-savvy Dean supporters, because the next thing that they're promoting, there's this other company that is partly owned by the Saudis that is promoting internet-based voting, and they're going to be providing internet-based voting for our United States military overseas. And if you think that voting machines that are only connected to modems when they receive updates or when they spit out data at the very end of the day are vulnerable, consider websites on which people vote. I mean, there is the CIA has been hacked into, the NSA has been hacked into, the White House website has been hacked into. There is no such thing ultimately as security, particularly in the face of a persistent and sustained attack. And this is just nuts.
It really
Robert,
is.
Thanks for the Yeah. Final point you want to make?
Yeah, I'm just going to do one thing for certain, and that is to keep writing the newspapers and other media organizations and demand that they cover this issue.
Yes, the Committee of Correspondents. I have put a link on TomHartmann.com. We redid the homepage, so it's got all the radio show stuff on it, so you don't have to go looking for the show. Just go to TomHartmann.com. And there's a nav link down on the left that says Write Your Rep, and you can write reps with an exclamation mark. You can click on that, and it takes you to the People for American Way form. I've since learned that MoveOn.org has such a site, and there's another site. It's not at the top of my head that has a similar site where you can write an electronic message to your representative. But paper is always the best, and calling. It just costs, you know, what, a dime, 15 cents to make a long-distance call to Washington, D.C. Pick up the phone and call your elected representatives and let them know what you're thinking. It will just take you 5 minutes, and the impact is so huge. This was one of the big things that I got from this meeting this weekend. I mean, today and tomorrow, you've got all these hundreds of folks in this GRA meeting that I was at this weekend, literally physically going door-to-door in the halls of Congress talking to their elected representatives, and that's ultimately the most powerful way to do it. There are six lobbyists for every representative. Every single representative. There's six. There's so many. It's time for we the people to be heard from. Robert, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. 1-800-825-5937. And Billy in Santa Fe is on the line. Or Santa Cruz. Hey, Billy, how you doing?
Hey, buddy. I wanted to straighten you out. You're giving out some bad information on this impeach Bush thing.
Okay.
Here's the deal. We don't have to worry about Cheney. That's easy. The template for this one is the crooked Nixon administration, where you get rid of both the vice president and the president. And, you know, the day after Cheney has to let the facts of his meeting with the energy company comes out, he'll be hounded from office.
He's toast.
Yeah, now let's talk about voting machines for a second.
Yeah.
I'm not against electronic voting. It's a great idea. However, you don't do electronic voting by itself. You do electronic voting with a printer attached, with a document that prints out at the end of your electronic vote, that prints out two little perforated things that are exactly the same. It says, first of all, what your vote was, which gets checked with the screen, double check, one of which you keep, and one you leave in a box. So it's literally a physical vote at your polling place, in your wallet. And then the electronic
Billy, absolutely. And this is what I was suggesting in my article, and this is what Rush Holt suggests in his bill. But even that is not tamper-proof, as David Dill pointed out. Thanks for the call, Billy. Tom Hartmann on the IE America Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Boy, I remember the good old days.
Yeah, when was that?
2003, of course, when interest rates were at historic lows and we knew the economy was turning around. What an historic opportunity. We really jumped on it. How'd you do?
Well,
we needed to expand our manufacturing and warehousing, so we called General Steel Corporation and ordered buildings engineered for our area and to meet our needs. And with the stucco and rock products provided by the General, our buildings look great.
How will you look back at this historic opportunity? Small business owners know that now is the best time to build that new warehouse, manufacturing, or retail space. Whether you need a 60 by 200 foot building for under $50,000 or a 100 by 175 for under $98,000, call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need to expand your business, you need the General. If your church or school needs to build quickly and save money, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into Tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Another audio clip from the production meeting.
Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
If we don't care, and it shows.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
I don't have something on that says he's a great goof liberal.
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us. The Gulf of Tonkin resolution, the document that gave LBJ the authority to fight the war in Vietnam, although it never was defined as a war. It was always a police action. There was never a congressional declaration of war. The Gulf of Tonkin resolution, I've been reading a book called Why the Senate Slept, which is excellent, by the way. Those of you who are junkies of this kind of stuff, it's been in print forever. I bought a used copy of it in a bookstore the other day, and I just got into it. I can't stop. It's an amazing book, and it's about this very situation. Why the Senate slept through this whole thing. And of course, the Gulf of Tonkin incident was where the USS Maddox fired on three North Vietnamese patrol boats on August 2nd. The Maddox then reported that 22 torpedoes were fired on August 4th, almost hit the USS Turner Joy. The word was that our ship had been hit, and on August 4th, LBJ went on TV at 11:30 p.m., and on August 5th, Congress passed a resolution giving LBJ, the authority to take all necessary measures to repel attack and prevent further aggression. The vote was 466-0 in the House and 88-2 in the Senate. Only Ernest Gruenin of Alaska and Wayne Morse of Oregon voted against, handing Lyndon Johnson a blank check that was still not a declaration of war, just a blank check. Now let's go back in time before that. Before that, this was August of 64. Let's go back from August to July, from July to June, from June to May. Here we are 3 months before, and our involvement is getting deeper and deeper. We have had the continuation of Plan 34A, Operation Ranch Hand, Operation Sunrise. The NSAM 88 plan from March 16 of a tit for tat retaliation
for North Vietnamese raids. It was getting hotter and hotter in Vietnam. May 27th, 1964, LBJ calls Senator Richard Russell, his mentor and very dear friend, and says, "What shall we do? What am I getting us into?" And Russell says, "We are in the quicksand up to our necks, and I just don't know what the hell to do about it." Listen to this remarkable conversation.
"Well, think about it, and I'll talk to you again. I hate to bother you, but I'm just
going to help you. God knows I do, because it's a terrific quandary that we're in over there, just we're just in the quicksands up to our very necks, and I just don't know what the hell is the best way to do about it.
I love you, and I'll be calling you.
I'll see you soon."
And LBJ, "I love you, and I'll be calling you." It's like, what can you say? What can you say about that? Is Iraq going to be Bush's Vietnam? Is it going to be that? What do you think the future of this is going to be? I have some very specific concerns. Christiana Amanpour of CNN in today's USA Today, CNN's top war correspondent, Christiane Amanpour, says the media muzzled itself during the Iraq war. And she says CNN, quote, was intimidated, end quote, by the Bush administration and by Fox News, which, quote, put a climate of fear and self-censorship, end quote. The article says the media largely towed the Bush administration line in covering the war, and by doing so, failed to aggressively question the motives behind the invasion, which we now know go back to the Cheney energy meetings with Enron and Exxon and Halliburton back before 9/11, when they were parceling up the Iraqi oil fields and figuring out which oil company they wanted to, how much money they could make, and no doubt discussing which of these companies would give the Republicans the largest campaign contributions. Stay tuned. We'll get right back on this. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
Walmart now faces 37 lawsuits in 29 states over its practice of forcing workers to spend time on the job off the clock. The latest case was filed Friday in Minnesota by four women who claimed they were made to come in early, work late, and skip breaks, primarily to tidy up the store floor. Their lawyers estimate the company squeezed some 500,000 hours of unpaid labor out of its Minnesota workforce in the last 5 years. The women seek class action status on behalf of more than 60,000 current and former Walmart workers. The discount behemoths already settled a similar class action lawsuit in Colorado for $50 million, and another is pending in Indiana.
The fifth ministerial meeting of the World Trade Organization collapsed yesterday under protest both inside and out of the globalization summit. Inside the meetings, talks were scuttled after Kenya's trade minister led a walkout by poor countries over rich nations' farm sector subsidies and export credits.
2 weeks ago, the chairman of the New York Stock Exchange, Dick Grasso, found himself in the middle of a firestorm of criticism when it was revealed he's getting a $140 million lump sum payment for his work overseeing the trading operation. Grasso initially claimed to have no say in his pay, that is, until a foot-high stack of documents was unearthed last week detailing how he lobbied for his own windfall. The reason? Grasso told the New York Stock Exchange's board of directors he needed the sky-high compensation in order to remain competitive and respected among the corporate executives he has to work with every day. Making matters worse comes a new disclosure that Grasso was to get an additional $48 million in compensation over the next 4 years. He has since agreed to forfeit that, but stands firm on the other $140 million.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities, like from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies, Raven Simone. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out, so he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Change is it going to be? Boy, there are we stand at such an extraordinary moment in history. On the message board, one of the folks, it's scrolled up now, I can't see who it was. I think it might have been Pace Cop. But anyhow, somebody said, maybe it wasn't, my apologies if I'm identifying the wrong person, but somebody said, but Tom, Ho Chi Minh was a national hero in Vietnam, and of course the Vietnamese rallied around to fight off the Americans, whereas Saddam was hated and reviled in Iraq. True. Largely true. Actually, there were probably a lot of people who were loyal to Saddam, those who basically worked for him. I mean, keep in mind, he had nationalized almost everything, and so he was the paymaster for the country. And if you didn't get in his way and you were willing to go along and get along, then, you know, just like in Stalinist Russia, there were a lot of people who were very happy with Stalin because he brought stability. So, as did Saddam to Iraq. But nonetheless, in my opinion, nationalism always, always trumps popularity of leadership. If Mexico, you know, I don't like George Bush. You know, there he is. I don't think he should be in the White House. I think the thing was, rigged by James Baker and company. The whole thing of stopping the election down in Florida, and then this Florida Supreme Court saying, no, we're going to count every vote in the state, which would have given the election to Al Gore. And then George Bush suing Al Gore and taking it to the Supreme Court. And in the Bush v. Gore case, the Supreme Court saying this case does not set precedent for any other cases. It is a unique case. I mean, this had never been done in the history of the Supreme Court. And they ruled that citizens of Florida do not have a right to vote for President of the United States and decided the election. I think it was all wrong. So I don't like George Bush. I don't like his policies. I don't think particularly highly of him as a person, as an intellectual. He's not somebody I'd want to have over for dinner. I don't particularly hate him. I just think he's toxic. I think he's destructive. I think he's destructive for our nation. I think that he's probably harmed, well, I don't need to go into a rant about it, but the point is, I don't like George Bush, but if Mexico I live near Canada, I live 200 miles south of Montreal. It's even less than that, it's a 2-hour drive north of here, and from here in the People's Republic of Vermont, high up in the Green Mountains, where this program is being broadcast from live from our Athenwood studio. If Canada was to invade the United States, I'd be right there in the front lines fighting them back. Well, maybe. I mean, if they brought their national health care system with them. I'm just joking. If we were invaded by a foreign nation, I would be all in favor of fighting back. even though I don't like George Bush. Nationalism trumps the popularity of a leader, and that's what we're seeing right now in Iraq. That's what we saw in Vietnam. That's what the Russians saw in Afghanistan, which is, somebody else pointed out on the board, that's probably a better analogy. And here are some examples. Pacecop says, Braintrub, here's some examples of peaceful revolutions that overthrew government. Nashville, 1960, India, 1930, South Africa, 1984, Denmark, 1940, Poland, 1980, Chile, 1983. Well, that one's arguable. Interesting. A fascinating conversation going on in our chat room. I recommend you check it out. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Pete in Lakeland, Florida is on the line. Pete, thanks for waiting. Well, come on in, have a seat. What's up?
Well, one good thing about the election going into 2004 is the Republicans, not the religious base, the working Republican, the Republican who's used to making big dollars, is getting educated very quickly. Even Tim Russert's gong show with Dick Cheney yesterday is not going to help, because you've got Republicans asking, there are no weapons of mass destruction, then we invaded a country for no reason. The no bid contracts, the religious Republicans and Democrats don't understand the basis of a no bid contract. Business Republicans know how that works. No bid contracts means you've got a guy on the inside and a guy on the outside. That means that a lot of Republicans who want to do business with the government are being shut out. As the war is in its infancy, look at Afghanistan. That's going to be the first one that's going to turn, and then it's going to be, of course, in Baghdad. Right now in Afghanistan, since the Americans control the country, the airspace, Afghanistan is now the number one producer of heroin. Now, if we're going to have a war on drugs, here we control a country. We can blow it up at any time. We've got navies. We've got airplanes flying over it. And these poppy fields are going up because they're using the poppy fields to keep the warlords on our side. So we're going to flood Europe with heroin just so we can buy off a few warlords.
We're not going to. We are doing it right now. Europe is already, and Russia, are already complaining about this, because 75% of the heroin in Europe and almost 100% of the heroin in Russia is coming out of Afghanistan right now, and it's creating an absolute screaming epidemic crisis in those areas.
Well, and it gets worse. Now, look at Iraq. Hey, the volunteer army is going to be kaput. I mean, there's going to be a lot of people who are not going to
reach out
to the Guard.
You mean the Iraqi volunteer army?
I mean the volunteer. I mean the National Guard. They're going to have to implement a draft. See, Bush can't shut
this off.
Oh, you
mean the American National Guard. Right, yeah.
I mean,
or they're going to have to start paying more.
Well, the problem is that when 20 years ago when they started cutting back on Pell Grants, and they started cutting back on college loans, they just refunded that money through the military. Nobody joins the military to go sit in a desert at 130 degrees.
Well,
nobody
some people
does
do,
that.
But they're a minority.
They want to get an education. Well, now they're getting an education. They're finding out that Bush is cutting their benefits as fast as he can. And they're sitting over there, and if they get shot up, so be it. But Dick Cheney and his buddies got those no-bid contracts for Halliburton. I mean, did you catch that with Meet the Press yesterday?
I read the transcript of it this morning. Louise had recorded it. In fact, I was going to have some clips of it on the air here today, but time got away from us.
Basically, what
Cheney said to every answer was, I don't know, or we didn't know.
Right, right. Well, he also got asked the question about no-bid contracts.
Right, and he said, I kept away from that.
And Cheney basically said, well, it's a fine company, and they do so much. He didn't follow up saying, hey, Dick, aren't you getting $1 million a year as a pension? Hey, Dick, didn't you really screw up Halliburton by purchasing those asbestos plants?
I know.
Dick,
is this
a payoff?
Tim Russert is, he's... Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, it's not just Tim Russert. I was going to say Tim Russert is such a toady to these guys, but he has to be in order to get them to be on his program and to play the game. That's the problem.
I think it goes a little deeper than that. It's Tim Russert's working for General Electric. He's not working for Meet the Press.
Right, and General Electric is making a fortune in the weapons business.
Exactly.
Among other things.
Well, that's the thing. Even Fox News, I mean, the best thing that could have happened is they gave the debates, because there were a lot of Republicans that I've heard said, my God, the country's in bad shape, only because they watched the debates and only because they were on Fox.
Yeah, now, although they also then eviscerated the Democrats afterwards. Pete, I got another call here. I got a quote I want to play, so I need to wrap this up. The final point you wanted to make, it sounded like you were still going there. Oh, yeah, we've lost Pete. Okay. Thanks, Char. Let me just share one quick little thing here with you, and then we'll go to Matt's call. This is on May 27, 1964, before the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, keep in mind. But George Bundy was the national security advisor to LBJ, and he came to LBJ and said that he wanted to talk to the Canadian officials about using them as middlemen to talk with the North Vietnamese to try to work out something. And listen to what LBJ said before the Gulf of Tonkin. Listen to what LBJ has to say about this. Then we'll take this call right after this. But just listen to this clip. This is pretty amazing.
I think we ought to plan on that basis. I'll tell you, the more I just stayed awake last night thinking about this thing, the more I think of it, I don't know what in the hell. It looks like me we're getting into another Korea.
Now that's LBJ, and he continues.
It just worries the hell out of me. I don't see what we can ever hope to get out of there with once we're committed. Once I believe the Chinese communists coming into it, I don't think that we can fight them 10,000 miles away from home and ever get anywhere in that area. I don't think it's worth fighting for, and I don't think we can get out. And it's just the biggest damn mess.
It is. So. An awful mess.
LBJ before the Gulf of Tonkin saying, I don't believe it's worth fighting for. I don't know how we're going to get out. And yet then we had the Gulf of Tonkin resolution. It just got away from him. And then we had, you know, hey, LBJ, how many kids did you kill today? In fact, he continues along these lines in this conversation.
And we just got to think about I look at this sergeant of mine this morning. Got six little old kids over there, and he's getting out my things and bringing me in my night reading and all that kind of stuff. And I just thought about ordering those kids in there, and what in the hell am I ordering him out there for?
One thing
the hell
is
Vietnam worth to me? What is Laos worth to me? What is it worth to this country?
Now we
got a treaty, but hell, everybody else got a treaty out there, and they're not doing anything about it.
Yeah.
Now, of course, if you start running the communists, they may just chase you right into your own kitchen.
Yeah, and there it goes. It gets back to LBJ was being pursued by the right-wingers. He was living in fear of the right-wingers, and that was the bottom line. He had to respond to them. And he couldn't go against Cuba because he was convinced that the Cubans had killed JFK, that Castro had, and so he had to make his stand against communism somewhere else in the world. He chose Vietnam, and it bit him in the butt big time. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. Matt in Detroit, do you think that this is going to be the next Afghanistan, the next Vietnam?
I think it already is.
Yeah.
But, hi, Tom. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks for calling.
I called a couple of weeks ago, and I mentioned about Work in America. It's an AFL-CIO community affiliate.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, you couldn't sign up and actually become a member, and now you can.
Oh, this is the thing where if you work for a place that will not allow unionization, or it's just not practical, or it's just not going to happen, you can still participate with the unions as a member of a membership organization rather than as a unionized employee.
It's kind of like the AARP for retired people.
Or like joining the Chamber of Commerce for small business people.
Right. You don't have to be employed. You don't have to be you could be union or non-union, and it's just if you believe in, you know, working people and you know, the common, you know, folks of America, you know, this could be a very moving political organization.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to call back and let you know that, you know, you can become a member, and so can the other listeners of your show.
Okay. And the URL is workingamerica.org, right?
Right. It only takes as little as a $5 contribution.
Great. Thank you, Matt. I appreciate it. Thanks for letting our folks know about it. Working.workingamerica.org. It's time for us to get active. It's time for us to join workingamerica.org, also moveon.org, another great membership organization. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Woody in Beaumont, Texas is on the line. Woody, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, Tom. How you doing, bud?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you, Woody?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. Just blasting down the highway, story of my life. proverbial traveling salesman.
Yep.
Hey, I think this whole thing comparing Iraq to Vietnam is kind of silly, actually. Okay. You know, if GW had been the president during Vietnam, that whole thing would have been over in about 30 days. We'd have just marched into Hanoi and, you know, taken over. We wouldn't have piddled around like we did down there in South Vietnam trying to fight a defensive battle against a bunch of guerrillas. But
you think we could have just marched into Hanoi?
Oh, yeah. We'd have just rolled right in there and flattened it and taken it over, and that would have been the end of it.
Woody, I think you're incredibly naive.
But beyond
we,
that.
We tried to do that all across South Vietnam, and we lost so many soldiers. And we lost a lot of soldiers in Vietnam.
We lost 55,000 guys there and probably 200,000 wounded. Because we sat back there in fire bases and sent patrols out to get ambushed. And because they tried to dictate the war from the White House instead of letting the commanders in the field call the shots.
No, there were a lot of commanders in the field calling the shots, Woody. That's a mythology. And Woody, you know how many Vietnamese died in the Vietnam War?
Oh, Christ, probably in 7 years. I would think so.
Okay, we got 56,000 Americans who died in the Vietnam War. What's the Pentagon's number for how many Vietnamese died?
Are you talking about North and South? I wouldn't have a clue anyway, but probably more North than South.
What's your guess?
Oh, I would say over 1 million.
Yeah, more than 2 million.
More than 2 million, yeah. I wouldn't
doubt. We killed more than 2 million of them, and they still weren't ready to roll over. You really think we could have just rolled into Hanoi? I don't think so.
Oh, sure.
I think when people believe that they are fighting for their nation, they will fight to the death.
When we were trying to get them to the peace table in Paris, when we started Operation Rhinebacker and started bombing Hanoi back into the Stone Age, within 3 weeks, they were back at the table ready to talk. I mean, there was just no doubt about it. We were flattening them, and they knew it, and they... You know, that's what got them to talk. Now, of course, what they said and what they did were two different things.
The whole idea of a terroristic war where you murder hundreds of thousands of civilians with bombs in order to create a political change. I mean, this is something we were in the battle to fight
communism, and that was just one part of it. Incidentally, that's a battle we eventually won. We were trying to stem the flow of communism into the world. And Vietnam was we lost the battle but won the war when it was all said.
Woody, communism was collapsing of its own weight, and Vietnam today is still officially communist.
That's officially communist. My company has manufacturing facilities there now.
Right, exactly. And China is still communist. I mean, you've got more than almost a quarter of the entire world's, almost a fifth of the world's entire population is communist right now. And you're saying we won the war? No, I don't think so. I think that communism never worked, and it fell of its own weight. It collapsed of its own weight. It had nothing to do with anything that we did militarily. We just pissed away a lot of money.
Communists or socialists are, you know, but I'm saying is these countries even look at China. I mean, they're becoming more and more capitalist every day. My company manufactures in Vietnam right now.
Yeah.
The company and I think that's just the normal course of events.
Woody, you got 5 seconds here to wrap up. That music means we're at the end of the segment.
All right. Well, I enjoyed talking to you about it, but I think that we will persevere in Iraq. Don't worry about that. We'll get it all straightened out.
Thank you, Woody. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. Democrats. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
The Mike Molloy Show.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, BartCop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man for people who had more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
you know, it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to
go on. Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, your animalogical super information highway about pets. Every Saturday and Sunday, we take your calls, help you with your pets, give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like, from Eight Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel. Animal Talk, Saturday noon to 2, Sunday 7 to 9 p.m. on the IE America Radio Network.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or a fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, it's the Jazz Police. Leonard Cohen is so good. That Jazz Police. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Jerry in North Carolina has called 1-800-TALK-YES. Jerry, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I just wanted to tell you that the guy that was on before gives Travis Felton a bad name. We're a smarter lot than that.
Oh, Woody's a good guy. He just, you know, he's got a few funny notions.
Maybe he's a little misdirected. The thing that he said George Bush would not do, and that is try and run a operate a war from the main from the homeland, is exactly what Paul Wolfowitz and Donald Rumsfeld and their ilk did. They thought they could outsmart the generals of experience. They tried to dictate how many soldiers and where they were going to be and what they were going to do and what was going to happen, and they were totally inept at it.
Right.
Yeah, LBJ did not micromanage the Vietnam War. His generals, Westmoreland and company, did a very good job of screwing it up all by themselves.
Yeah.
Same with Nixon. Nixon never thought of himself as a military strategist.
Seems like Johnson and Nixon only took a big hand in micromanaging the press release.
Yeah. Yeah, and the politics of it. Good point, Jerry. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. So is this going to be a problem for George? Well, you call it Vietnam, call it Afghanistan, call it what you want. I wrote a piece for Common Dreams a few weeks ago, and I started it out by saying the two words that you will not hear on network news are oil and nationalism, because nobody wants to talk about what this war is really about and what the Project for the New American Century in code essentially has been saying right from the beginning. As long as we believe, as George Herbert Walker Bush said, that the American lifestyle is not negotiable, that we must take from whomever has oil around the world so that we can have our Hummers, then we must seize those parts of the world, seize control over those parts of the world that have the oil. And surprise, surprise, Iraq has more oil than virtually any place in the world, and perhaps more oil than any place in the world. There's a lot of the fields of Iraq have not yet been explored, and it certainly is looking now like Iraq may end up having more oil than Saudi Arabia, and they're relatively virgin fields, which means you can pump them out for a buck and a half a gallon instead of $10 or $15 a gallon. So let's see where this thing is going to go. And nationalism, of course, you know, they just don't want us here. Our program today was produced by Louise Hartman and Joe McPherson, Joe down in Atlanta, Georgia. And engineered in Detroit by Shar Jones. Thanks for joining us today. And tune in tomorrow, same time, same place. This is Tom Hartman. See you then.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to animal talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal talk.